When it comes to hot takes, the only ones that we here at Last Free Nation would prescribe you take involve me on my other show, Hot Take Point Made, on this channel, which you can click the YouTube link below, and then go and watch a recent episode of that where I get Maui and Kasata to say ridiculous things, which obviously the joke there would be like, what's different from their normal analysis? But you know, don't be cheeky. You all know what I mean by that. And I actually do a pretty good job of getting them to be like a little bit more outrageous and spicy and have like, if people don't know, every episode essentially is Kasad with like a different mad take on Nico. Like that one is probably our favorite one, was the one before Cologne, where his real take was that, like, out of protest against Hooksy, Nico should just bench himself, which is like that's one of his, that might be one of Kasad's greatest takes ever. It was actually amazing. But that's the only time where I would say put up with like irritating personalities, annoying you, hot takes, because when it comes to smoking cannabis, that's not what you're going to want at all. I can tell you right now, the worst part of smoking cannabis actually is getting all the smoke in your lungs, and the fact that, like, if you smoke multiple times, then it's going to be really irritating. And if you're not somebody who smokes cigarettes, by the way, it's going to be even worse, because you're just not, you're not acclimatized to that sort of world. So instead, the Freeze Pipe, our sponsor, has the solution for you, because with their food safe glycerin chamber that you take out and just put into the freezer section for a mere 1 hour, so almost enough time, well, the joke is more than enough time to watch one map of Virtus Pro player. It'll always be Virtus Pro who gets the beating on that one. You have to just say, listen, Jim, you keep doing it, mate, not me. That about 1 hour, except the difference is, this is cool in a different way. His is like, you know, some weird style of player. Obviously, when it comes out, it will then cool the smoke, and then you won't have to have the annoyance. You get all the upside with none of the downside. Check out thefreezepipe.com with the code LFN for 10% off. And by the way, it doesn't just have to be a traditional bong setup. They have it all. They have bobblers, dab, oil rigs. They even have a couple of newer products. They have a vape pen. By the way, if you don't want any smoke at all, as the name suggests, the vape pen uses vapors. So at that point, you'll have no smoke whatsoever. They have a cartridge-based system. It's really small. It's got like one button setup. They've got a blunt tip, which is like a smaller version of a freeze pipe that only takes 20 minutes in the freezer section. You can put a blunt or a joint in there, and essentially you can smoke the classic way, but again, with less of the smokes, it's going to cool it down for you. So thanks to thefreezepipe.com. Check it out. LFN, 10% off to, as I always say, make your cannabis smoky experience a cannabis smoky experience. No one will ever be, listen, there's like, what's mad is I'm such an anti-commercial person normally, but it almost comes too naturally to me at this point, doesn't it, Maniac? Like, in another world, I was supposed to be this sort of like a silver-tongued, you know, salesman.
Every day I'm just waiting for the advisement to come so I can see where, like, what role you're taking, what kind of wordplay are going to come out. Yeah. I'm just like, okay, that's a new episode.
Exactly. This was a fairly tame one, to be fair. Normally, I'm throwing even more people in there. Like, Jim just caught the stray there because, spoiler, as we'll get into this episode, I think in Gamers 8, we saw the best and the worst of Jim, but we'll get into this, okay? So what we're going to do, as usual, me and Maniac, it's only episode 2, technically, at Counterpoints. We're going to do a few of these, which just me and Maniac doing our approach, because I like to build up the rapport and establish for people what the show is going to be like and what the dynamic's going to be like. But we're going to have some guests, don't worry, especially if I can get them around some fun or spicy topics, or we'll get a pro player on that maybe Maniac knows so he can get a bit more info out of them. But what we'll do is, my style is, I hate actually the approach a lot of talk shows take, where when they do a tournament, right, they'll get up the Wikipedia or whatever in the background on the second screen, and they'll really start at like the beginning matches, mate. Like, it's why, if you notice, I don't do previews even in the same way as other people. Like, I don't do a preview where you talk about the opening matches, because they're actually the matches that, once they're played, mean the least in the tournament. Like, what you care about in a preview is who's going to win the tournament, who's a dark horse, who might disappoint. So similarly, once the tournament's done, I like to just work backwards. Like, let's not pretend like we're going to talk now. Like, and then G2 in the opener, how it's like, we already know they go out in the semis and almost made the final. Like, so why, let's just skip to that. And so what we're going to do is we're going to use Gamers it, but we're going to work backwards and use it as a way to talk about each of the teams. So let's just start with the champions, since obviously that's a spicy topic, because quite frankly, I have to start here, Maniac, which is, since they won the tournament and now they've gotten the Flames, I call him Flames, by the way. I know it's like a mixed bag, but call him Flames E or Flames. I'm just calling Flames. I pick one at the beginning and I try to stick with it.
Pick a line.
Like Z-Woo. And basically, now that they've won an event with him, right, part of it, obviously, now that they've won, means people are going to then also add in the championships with Dupree, etc. So the question becomes, to Maniac, notice how I phrased that, to Maniac specifically, does this mean Vitality is number one? Mm-hmm. Would they be number one for you right now? Does this win do it for them?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. Because on the way to the trophy, you beat both G2 and Ants, which to me, as the the greatest rivals for this, this competition, right? I'll be just a little bit careful in the sense that I think the comeback on Mirage on the third map of G2 is sort of...
We'll definitely get into that, don't worry.
It's astronomical, right? It's astronomical. And so we all have a tendency to, like, in hindsight, pretend like, oh yeah, Vitality was a better team at the event. I mean, they could have been eliminated a million times on that Mirage game. But since they've actually made it, since they actually had that comeback, they pushed G2, they beat them in three maps, and then they do the same to Ents, which had beaten them as well in Cologne. I think right now, and also considering that Heroic is once again showing very clear signs of mental fragility, I think this is a legitimate claim. It's not the strongest, and I don't think the debate is close, but I think it's a legitimate claim to the number one spot when it comes to Vitality, yeah.
Yeah, for me, the interesting part about where we're at is it's not too dissimilar to earlier in the year when you had that mixture of like when Vitality was starting to come on strong and then you had like Heroic was still really consistent. You had FaZe could maybe win an event out of nowhere. G2 had won events out of nowhere. Mm. And it was more like basically before each tournament, you're almost just asking someone, what are your personal, like, which players do you like and what style do you like when you ask who is the number one team? Because there wasn't a clear number one. And in fact, I even think there are parallels here that we can mirror. Like, for example, one thing we're going to get into in a minute when we talk about them is Ents is just starting to look like they're the new Heroic as Heroic falls off. Like, they've got all the same qualities. Like, they look so awesome right up to a certain point. Then they don't win the big match. And then they don't have, like, the superstar player who turns up and takes over. So there's a lot of similarities there, but I can see why some people, for example, are saying Ents is number one because if want to go on pure aggregate and look at, you know, how they do in most games in the field. They are an excellent team. They have impressed a lot of people. I'm kind of with you, though. If I actually had, like, gone to my head, like, I die if I pick the wrong team that wins the next tournament, I would pick Vitality as the team to win it. But there's another reason why, though, which is I still think they've got a lot of flaws in this version of the lineup that they haven't, like, fixed compared to where they were at with the Dupree lineup. Like, that's actually why that gamble to me was a big gamble. And I never blamed them for doing the gamble. It was more just I didn't know Flames was the player I would replace. But the reason why I don't blame them is I also do think it could have been fool's gold to keep with the last lineup because it looked like it had sort of plateaued. It was a very good team, but it had also plateaued. Like, I don't think they could have got any... There's nothing more to get out of the team, if you know what I mean. Like, Spinks was excellent. Ziwu was the best player. Magisk was playing awesome. Like, what more can you get there? It's not like Apex is actually going to, like, double his fragging. It's not like, you know... Dupree's game was... We already know what it was. Like, we saw the heights of it and we saw that it couldn't go too much further. So, to me, it was a good gamble to make. Now it's paid off because they've gotten the first title win and they've even had good runs in general. But the key thing for me is I always have a principle, which is if it's like all conditions are similar or equal, like we both have a good map pool, we're both championship material, we're both like teams that, you know, you win a map, I win a map, then nearly always the factor for me when I'm being biased and picking who I will win is who has the best superstar player. Because if you have the best superstar player in Counter-Strike, I know a lot of players, funnily enough, hate this sort of thinking. They don't think you should have superstars. They don't think there are stars. Like, I'm pretty swear, the best examples of teams like this are the teams that were very balanced, like the Fnatic 2015 or Astralis. You go talk to them, they'll be like thinking I'm like one of these like American TV personalities making a fake story. To them, it's like you shouldn't say Device is the superstar. It should be like, look, we've got like... Look, dude, we've got Magisk over here on CT, and then we've got Dupree when he's on T-side, and then, yeah, if Device has the AWP, sure, he does just the other. Same way in Fnatic. I mean, Flusher just retired recently. I'm sure someone like Flusher doesn't really vibe that I'd say Olaf Meister was the best. To him, it's like, do you see me at Majors? Like, what? I was carrying all the clutches. When I'm pretty good. If you're Crims, you can go, excuse me, can I get in on this convo? You know what I mean? Like, these are all mega players, but the problem with that thinking is this. In a general team game, they have a point. There are roles you play. There is a level of balance. But here's the difference. The reason I think certain players are superstars and certain players are just very good players, and this is why I would make the distinction between a prime Olaf and a prime Flusher, is to me, someone like a Flusher has a good game when the circumstances align, when he's in the right half, he's having feelings. Someone like a prime Olaf or whatever the superstar player is, they sometimes just have to have a good game. There's no choice. It's like when we get later, if we talk about the Ziwu topic, the problem is, it's not that you're even playing bad if you just lose a game and you play average. That's where we do expect you to sort of do the Superman and go into a telephone box, come out and just save the day, no matter what's happening in the game. It's one of the reasons, by the way, why I actually do downplay Huxley a little bit. I've just seen too many games where Nico dropped like 35 kills, and it's like, I know Huxley ain't telling him to do that, mate. No one could tell him to do that. Like, That's just where your superstar pulls you out of the fire and allows you to get wins that if you're snappy, you don't have that play, mate. You just have to lose that game and then go, oh, well, back to the drawing board. So to me, the Ziwu factor is a significant one. And crucially, as you saw at this tournament, dude, if you're a Vitality fan, the future looks very promising. Because right now, like, Spinks doesn't put up gaudy numbers over whole tournaments, but mate, especially in a match, he can be extremely good. And I actually think his, like, eye test really checks out. Like, this is another bona fide. Like, this isn't the 2019 Vitality or the 2021 one where everyone was like, it's just Ziwu all day. No, no, they have other players here. And then, mate, Flames, we already know his aim's good. And then Magus, like, as always, just chills, mate. He's just like, he's just humming in the background, and he'll always give you those big games when you need him. So I actually think, like, the raw, like, even though it's only one player change, you can see, like, now the difference is this isn't even their peak level, mate. They don't even look like, no. I said, like, they've cleaned everything up. They've got plenty of holes. There's things we could go into the map pool. There's all sorts of problems. But yeah, if this is what, like, the sort of, like, I'll be real, I think that was like 8 out of 10 Vitality that won that event. So when I even think Ziwu didn't play that great. It's actually one of his, like, not as great MVPs, quite frankly. If you can win like that, that's the difference. Old Vitality couldn't win like this, mate. They had to have Ziwu have, like, all-time great performance, probably, like, insane calling, maybe the coach does an awesome job, they already stay in their map pool. Like, this was, as much as it was flawed, that makes it very promising to me. This actually makes me think the ceiling for this team is very high, so I would take them number one. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you're making a whole lot of good points. I think being able to get a W in that way in Riyadh, knowing the kind of issues they still have with the lineup, tells a whole lot about, like, what kind of deep power we're working with. Like, you mentioned the map. Let's be clear. At this time, Anubis and Vertigo is an insta-loss. They, yep, they haven't gotten to the point. They haven't, yep, gotten to the point where you could see Flames, and I'm sure you can look at the numbers, and they'll reflect the same reality. He's very uncomfortable in his position. It's going to take him a little bit of time to warm up on the CT side. They still are able to stomach it in a best of three where they lose this map pick, and anyway, they win best of three, the whole thing. So that in itself, huge. Far from being completely refined in terms of protocols, but still mentally very much in the game. Like, think about some of the scenarios that we've played out. There's, of course, the incredible G2 comeback on map number three, but there's also the technical issue that happened against Ents halfway through the second map, where they lost the first one, they stay in it, they win the second map. So some of these elements are really crucial, I think, if you want to have a team that establishes itself as a top. They have it. I also think that, as you say, the floor overall of the team is much higher now. Because, yes, sure, Apex is always going to have numbers that are deep in the red. I think it's almost unavoidable. If he has a good game here and there, you take it, you cash your chip at the casino and you leave. But when you think that Flames, Majisk, or Sphinx can be your worst fourth rifle, it's a golden yes, situation to be in.
Yes.
Majisk is probably still criminally underrated in what he does, yes, in some of his roles. Like, in CT side, is one of the strongest anchors that we have in the game. So huge stats on the T side as well. And I agree with you. You look at Zywo's numbers on the whole event, they're not great by his standards. Like, we're not talking about peak performances, but I think it mattered a whole lot to him that he was able to show up at the end and have that kind of impact, which remains a point of entry if you want to criticize Zywo and you want to, you know, temper down what he's doing. I think for him to be able to lift himself up from an average event, I'm going to use these terms carefully, but yeah, average event.
Relative to his form, obviously, yeah, yes.
Relative to his form, average event, and then suddenly map three, just fucking catching on fire, historical comeback, and then again in the grand final, 134 rating, just straight up superstarring. So yes, there's depth from coast to coast not on the lineup. And even when we are far from a finished product, it is already a team that can win. When they made the change, my prediction that I made in a couple of interviews was that I thought Vitality would never fall below the top four. I didn't think they would be so high so quick. I thought the hit would be a bit harder to stomach. It would take them a little bit of time. But you're also right. When you compare Flames to Dupree, I think the mistake is to do a one-to-one in the now and then. That's a mistake. You're not doing a one-to-one in now and then. You're doing a one-to-one in 6 months. And you can imagine what Flames can become. And then yes, suddenly, yes, this definitely a very strong candidate. Because also they've shown that compared to a Vitality of yesteryear, that's a team now that's ready to play the big games, like semifinals, finals. They're going at it. They might not win it, but they don't disappear. They don't just completely liquidify in the game and let it go by, as it had happened to Vitality early in the year. I don't know, like the Liquid game in Katowice, the Ends game in Pro League. This isn't happening anymore. So the lights are looking real green for Vitality. And I just hope that they maintain like a work ethic and they stay motivated. That's sometimes the one risk when you feel like you're already kind of at the top. Other than that, it's looking real good.
Yeah, actually, the way you said it there, it's a bit how I always frame it for G2 for like how crazy their lineup is. It's like, mate, if JKS is the second worst player, we've got a pretty insane lineup. Like, so yeah, same thing. If you make it, like, you can pick which. If you think either Flames or Magus is the like worst non-IGL player, then you can see the sort of talent we're working with. That's why I say the one narrative I will not allow to endure into this era of Vitality is I don't want to hear any of those stories, which at one at time were justified, of like ZWU doesn't have enough help. Now, here's the problem. It was always a bit of a crap storyline because they just meant like the stats show no one else frags out. So I would agree he didn't have like firepower help. But the problem is some of those lineups, even like, man, that original Vitality lineup was like the mega veterans were all like geniuses at playing big games. Like, so it was never quite true, but it was in the sense like he had to put numbers up. He had to produce or they could not win. Whereas, as I say here, there was even games where essentially, and this seems impossible if you're a ZWU fan, it never happened before. He actually got carried at times. Yeah, like the game you'll talk about against G2. Here, the rest of his team kept him in it, and then he took over an OT. In fact, let's talk about that because it's a good entry point to the whole ZWU topic. Because actually, this is where, because I'm not on the desk, people don't know my actual take. They only know my tweets, which I don't ever actually bait, Maniac. It's just that, like,
you mice.
People don't get this. I'm not like Pimp or Launders when they do like the bait tweet. My opinions just naturally are annoying enough. They look like bait to other people, if you know what I mean. Especially if I'm on Twitter, because if people don't know, I had to learn this myself, mate. It's why I brought back that cheeky little beak face emoji I do, because I realized if you don't do that, a lot of people can't read humor when it's on Twitter. Whereas if I was on a desk, you'll see the shit eating grin, won't you? And the little, and then you'll just know, like, nah, he's being annoying. And he, like, at that point, though, you won't take it too seriously. You'll know it's tongue in cheek, or if I mean it for real, right? Because the other thing as well on desks is when I actually do talk about history, then I'm very serious. That's my bread and butter. I'll make it clear the distinction, but it's harder on social media, I get it. So one thing that's going to shock people is this. I actually think the way that the end of the G2 game ends, for people who don't know, basically G2 was in a really strong winning position at the end on Mirage on the decider against Vitality in the semi-finals. Now, the one downside if you G2 is they were on T side, which is always different from just running the game out if you're on CT, but they were even in winning positions again and again in rounds. And there was a bunch of scenarios where basically they could have just won the game. And ZWU was actually mad quiet towards the end of this game in regulation. He was actually just straight up getting bullied when he was on like the B site on Mirage. People were just running him with an AK or one flash and just beating him in a duel. And it was actually looking really bad. But here's the thing I've got to give mad credit for. I haven't seen this before, mate. Right? One thing I think is quite cool about Apex, if people don't know, sure, when he wins or loses, he might trash talk people, but he's actually a very reflective player. Like, he will totally give, like, credit to other people or say, yeah, we do have a flaw. He's not one of those guys who just blindly has to believe his team's the best in every area. Well, one thing me and Apex actually agree upon, which apparently the ZWU fans don't, is we think there's still another gear that ZWU can go to, mate. I actually don't think he's capped out. Like, that's why I don't think he's the GOAT. Like, the difference is when Simple was at his peak, I've always said this, he was so insanely good, not just at killing people, but like somehow winning every scenario, that I had to sort of like say, this is one of the only players where I can't like impose my theory of Counter-Strike, because I would say that's the wrong move, but you're just winning every time you do it. So basically with your skill set, you're right and I'm wrong. Like, I don't know what you're doing. With ZWU, he plays a more like sensible way of playing. So I could always see how well is he doing. And the one thing I did always think he had missing in his game was, to some degree, he did let the game come to him and he did just take the scenarios presented. And then if he had a situation for a kill or a retake, so he would take it. But the difference is he wouldn't do the simple move, which to me is you just basically, you know, the game is going to shit. You know, you're about to lose. You can sort of see in your mind almost as if the game was over, like what it's going to be like when it all ends. And the worst feeling there is to let, in the terminology you use from fighting is to let yourself just be slowly choked out. You know, someone just go and you just like, you just fight a bit, you're like, oh. What you've got to do in that scenario is once it's going to shit, you've got to just sort of say, like, I'm just going to take a stand, basically. I'm going to go for a bunch of players. I'm going to do something. It's funny because if you do this and it doesn't work, like it's what Nico did at the Major, you will get mega criticized as the star player. If you go for a bunch of crazy players and Hail Marys and try to take duels that you don't have to, if you lose them, everyone will say it's your fault. But the difference is if I'm the star player, that's what I want. I want it to be where it's like, look, I either won us the game and got us back in this, or yeah, I'll take it on the chin. Like, I fucked up. Mate, the way he ended this game in OT was beautiful. This is exactly what I have wanted him to do for years, mate. Like, that looked like old school Simple. Do you remember when Simple was in the Na'Vi with Flamey, the really flawed one? And on CT, dude, he would do this. He would just say, you know what, fuck it. I basically go where I want from spawn. Like, if I want to go to this site, I think they're going to attack there, I go there now and I take your spot and you're playing like B, for example. He did, if no one saw this OT. Don't just look at the kills. Look where they're taking place on the map. He plays the whole CT side of the map. He's taking like short control as an AWPer, pushing up. Then later he's like pushed all the way up on the A site as CT, using like, I think it was like Magus or something as like a setup to like bait them out of the, when they're coming out of the ramp in the palace, so he can get free options. Then he's like in the window room shooting traditional position out of mid. Like, this is what I want to see, mate. Because in this scenario, the nightmare there, I can tell you, if you ever know pro players, is the one thing you always want to do against a dominant AWPer is know where he is. Because if you don't know where he is, the worst feeling ever is like he's played B site the whole map, and then you're walking out on like lower ramp, and suddenly you just get AWPed and like off angle, like, what the fuck? How can he be here? Like, that actually, that is a mad psychological edge you can put for your team. And I can tell you, back in the day when Simple was the best at that, that's why everyone called him the GOAT. Because famously, the map was Nuke that he was the best at this on. The way he would just rotate everywhere, you felt like you were always just fighting Simple everywhere on the map. You could never avoid him, you could never rotate away. Dude, he did this in this game like that. It's why people think I'm going to come with the whole angle like they shouldn't have won, G2 should have won it. Like, we can get into that in a minute, but I actually thought the way he won the game for them in OT was very impressive. Like, that's what I want him to do, by the way, in the majors. If he does this sort of style of play, like I said, there'll be times it doesn't work and you whiff a shot or the other superstar kills you. But the difference is, then you never have the question of what if, of like, what could I have done? Like, I think this is the fifth gear for Zeroom. This is the one I want to see from the, if he wants to not just be like on paper number one, but actually the guy who wins you all the trophies.
Yeah, I feel you. I get that. I think there might be, there is a clear difference between Simple and Zywoo in the sense of the ability for Simple to bring the game to himself and make the game about what he's going to do. And this is something that Zywoo still struggles to do, and I know it sometimes stems frustration, and I think he has to do it more. But in the sense of, Zywoo will at time fix structural issues in a CT side, and it pisses me off. Like, I don't want him to be in a position because yes, it fixes the rest of the map, and he does that a lot. You will see on maps where Vitality is struggling on the CT side, suddenly he becomes a solo AWP in a position because someone else on the other side is not able to do what they need to do, so he becomes that solution. That's an issue. I will say, though, something that I think is misrepresented for Zywoo. In all the big events that HLTV has recorded, Zywoo has the fourth most attempt in opening kill on the CT side. He is taking a whole lot of entry kills. To my money, too much. I'm going to be honest with you, too much.
Okay.
He sometimes does it at moments where I'm thinking, bro, what are you putting yourself in a 50-50 situation like this? Why don't you allow yourself to bait off of a teammate and then create a play out of the space that's going to be right there for you? Because I think this is where people like Nico, Zywoo, Simple, Device, the unique characters we have in the game, they make an impact when there's a little bit of chaos and like they know what they need to do. Like you just listed some of these good examples from this game, like on Mirage, at some point when he's A ramp and he gets a kill and then he suddenly just fucking pushes T spawn alone with an AWP.
Yes,
like that move.
Exactly.
There is no theory for that move. Yeah. That move doesn't exist. But because he feels it in that mid-round situation, he gets into there, he drops the bomb onto Hunter, crazy quickscope, and then he wins it. I feel like there are games where he doesn't allow himself to get to that position because he's just always... And on the T side, it's the same. I see him sometimes going in first. Like, I see him be the first tip of the spear when
I do hit that, though.
Out.
I do hit
oh
that,
my
mate.
God.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so from a top-down perspective of a leader that's thinking about his team, and Apex will sometimes say, you know, if we have a good position, if we have a good spawn or whatever, it doesn't matter if it's Zywoo, you go in first. I get that. I get the theory behind it because it optimizes your push and maybe you have a timing that you find. But fuck, man, that pisses me off sometimes when I see Zywoo having to cross a smoke first with a pop flash above his head, and then there is a 75% chance you die to an off angle immediately, and then he's not playing. These are moments where I wish that he was way more selfish than what he is now.
Yes.
And that to me is an avenue of development and improvement that he has to do at times because he keeps on putting his life on the line in early round situations, which means, as you mentioned, that when he catches on fire, he destroys the game, just like it happened against G2. And it took time. And you know what's funny? You watch his POV in the beginning of that CT half, and I'm not even sure he makes a lot of mistakes. He gets one tapped, pop
got
flash,
unlucky a couple of times,
perfect.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but not even unlucky. Just credit to G2.
Okay.
Like credit to G2 for a perfect peek, perfect execution, whatever. Hunter just white swings him, one tap immediately, and he hasn't changed the way he played throughout the half. He just became successful at it. He became successful in beginning that opening kill. At some point, he does the jump onto short from window. He dies immediately. He gets caught immediately by a push. He rotates back to B. He gets one tapped, and there's a flash coming over site. And you look at the tab and you're thinking, oh shit, like I was shitting the bed. But there is no like phenomenological difference between that moment and when he's actually winning. He's killing the people and then he keeps on going. So I wish at times he would just take a step back a little bit and not play more passive, just play a bit more selfish. Yes. Allow yourself to maybe sell your teammate that's in front of you. Simple has no problem doing that. If he thinks that the winning move is giving up on the people that's in front of him because he's going to multi-kill, he's going to do it without a doubt. Yes. And this, to me, it is as a clear and official Zywoo fan, this is still one of the greatest avenue of development we can see for this player.
Yes. I mean, it might sound counterintuitive to a fan because everyone wants to believe, like, let's be real, all teams and coaches preach sort of the thing of like, you know, we're all equal and we win together as a team, we lose as a team. It's not about you. It's about something more. That's all well and good as a general philosophy. Like you're talking about, obviously, if you're in a random game in the group stage, right? And then, yeah, Zywoo's playing on the outskirts. So you decide to pivot and go to that site. He should probably entry at that point in time. That does make sense. But I agree with you, especially if it's like a big game and it's a big round and he has like an actual weapon. Sometimes just let someone else be the meat, as they say in the French scene, yes. Let them be the bait, you know what I mean? Like, because like you're saying, even though it sounds counterintuitive, actually to know how to use your teammates selfishly is a form of team play. Because I always used to say this about Simple. I used to say to Simple, I actually have no problem with you being really selfish. I don't really like if you're like an arsehole to your teammates, like as a person. But I said to him, you can ask for any player you want on the map, as long as you then deliver. Because that's the responsibility that comes with it. It's like all power comes with responsibility, mm-hmm. Remember? So if you, essentially what you're saying there, and this is where actually Zywoo, I agree, needs to be more selfish. He needs to understand that, like, you know what, yeah, Mick's a brilliant player, he's many time major champion. Hey, Spinks is really talented. If they're on the site with you, mate, and you can make a player that ends this round now and you get like a 2K or an off angle or like you just get a free kill and then it's like you're not even just a trade, you should use them like that. Even though it's cynical, you should. And by the way, if you actually had the convo with them, they'd tell you, please do that. Like someone like Makers would be like, tell me that, mate. Like if you need the setup, I will absolutely do that for you and set you up so you can win this fucking game. Because on some level, they do understand they aren't you. Like if you are the Simple Zywoo, they know you've got a level you can go to that they can't. You can do things they can't. So in a way, as long as you actually understand like the team concept, they also want to be used in that regard. Because I've heard that's actually a problem in general in Vitality. I know it was an issue they had with Spinks when he came in the team. I've heard even Magus had this issue. That like a lot of people, they almost didn't want to be selfish. Like supposedly Magus did this. Magus wouldn't ever ask for someone to go on a play with him apparently on like T-side. He would just like sort of go on his own and just lurk around. And it's like, they had to tell him like, bro, if you have like an idea, just tell someone like, come and do this with me, like set me up. And apparently this is something for real. They changed like briefly before the major is part of why they were just like 1.5 times as good a team. So yeah, to me, that's a big factor. It's why people don't get it. If you, in the same way as if people only focus on the negatives of a superstar, they do this to Nico, in my opinion, all the time. Yeah, you'll see his flaws, but you'll also miss all the brilliant things about how he plays and the things he does that are unique and make him like transcendent in his own way. It's why to look at Nico, if your only statement is hasn't won a major, you've missed the entire game. You've missed his whole masterpiece of what this guy's done. Now, you're not wrong. If we're talking about pure top line accomplishment, he didn't get it. But Nico's career isn't defined by didn't win the major, because the question would be, how could that define you unless you were basically like almost the greatest player of all time? That's the real reason. If you think about it, it's almost a compliment that we keep going on about him not winning. Because the point is, every single time for the last like 5 years, we expect this guy can win the major. That isn't normal, guys. Like I won't actually shit on Cadian if he never wins a major. Because it's like, bro, it's actually impressive to me. You were even in the mix for those. Like, if you're Nico, yeah, you are supposed to. So similarly, if you come to this level, it's easy to just bang all day about what Zywoo isn't, but you have to look at what he is as well and what he is capable of doing. So I think that his fans sometimes do him a disservice there. Like, one, don't brag about like some of his weaker MVPs like this. Like, what you have to think of is this. I keep using this lens recently because I think it's very useful to know if you're sort of out of whack about how you talk about a player. I always say this, right? Imagine a casual fan of yours doesn't follow CSGO. Let's say he played some CSGO with you, some matchmaking over the years. But let's say he's from League of Legends or Dota or Rocket League. So some game drastically different enough from CSGO. If they came and they said, oh, hey, Maniac, I know you're like a huge fan of the Zywoo guy who I heard's the best at the end of CSGO. And, you know, I haven't really watched much CSGO, but I want to get into CS2. So what games should I watch of him to see how good he was? You wouldn't say, you got to get this game as 8. Well, like, this wouldn't even be like top 5 of the ones you'd list, you idiots. Like, if you actually big him up too much, you actually make him look not as good. Like, what you actually want to point out, like we're saying, is the guy is so cracked out. This is even a flawed performance and he ends up winning the MVP. Like, I actually think there's a detail people keep missing. You know, people always comment with Simple and Z-Wooks, it's a good point, that they can have like 23 kills in a game when you look at the scoreboard tab. And you're like, what? When did they get any of those kills? That's because they're so good. They get all the boring kills. Every kill that like a normal player, it might be like, you know, maybe it's like 64 together. They just get that every time. So it means they can have games which on the scoreboard are incredibly gaudy. Like, that would be like here's the difference. A Ziwu underperformance where he gets like a 1.23 rating, that would be like the Crazy Sun Pius performance where we're like, he's snapping, bro. Holy shit, did you see that? Everything was a 4K. Because he's just a normal player. Like, he doesn't get every single normal trade. He doesn't always get 2 instead of 1 every time they rush on the site. People like Ziwu and Simple do. That's why actually we have to put them in this other stratosphere. So let's get into like a little bit of this discussion, right? Because everyone knows you ran all the numbers on Twitter. But my problem is this. People don't seem to understand. I'm very explicit about things I care about as topics, mate. I made a video on this last year. My point about Ziwu is this. It's actually not even like that he always underperforms in big. That's like a straw man. It's that if you ever look at the prestige events, the majors, Cologne and Katowice, the ones that basically at the end of your career, you want to have as many of these on your resume as you can. And if you don't, someone's going to have to, if they're like me and you, a fan or a hater, they're going to go through and they're going to look at, why didn't you win more of those events? Like, why didn't you win like this Cologne here? Or kind of, like, people did this to Nico Carrigan for years, remember, before they won one. Mm-hmm. When someone does that, the problem with Ziwu is this, specifically those events after the online period when we've come back to LAN, he just repeatedly has had letdown performances in the big playoff matches. But again, not let down compared to a normal player. Like, his numbers are still be like a 1.2 rating. The problem is, we're talking about a player like going to his max level. And oftentimes I get the feeling he does have games he disappears in. Now, I actually think some of what we're talking about, by the way, probably plays into this. Like, yeah, one of the things you have to ask yourself is, this is why the selfish player who's got a big ego is actually very easy and predictable and transparent to look at, because everyone sort of knows what way he's going and how he's thinking about the game and what he wants to do. It's actually very difficult when you deal. So I had this problem with Device and Elise for many years, where on the one hand, they know they're really good, but they also think like, I'm just a part of the team though. And sometimes there's the question like, but is it even like, am I actually being irresponsible if I try and take over the gear like this? Should I just play within the system? Yep. Should I basically wait for my IGL or my coach to ask me to do something? If you're a very like a reflective person, and Ziwu to me seems like someone who's actually like very sort of like open to other people's perspective, it's actually, you can be tortured by these ideas of like, am I supposed to perform here? Is it okay to have a bad game? What do you think on this topic? Because I saw when you ran the numbers, the thing is, you've destroyed all the plebs, because some of them did just take the thing of like, he's just bad in every playoff game or some weird angle. I don't know what their fucking baseline was, mate. Like, obviously that was nonsense. Like, spoiler, you couldn't be number one in the world this many times if you're bad in playoff games. Like, that doesn't even make sense, does it, guys? Like, logically, there's a reason he's got all those MVPs. He didn't just carry the group stage and then we just went like, well, you were shit in the finals, but have the MVP. That doesn't exist. If anything, the final defines the MVP. So what's your take on this whole topic? Like, what is it that pissed you off, or what angles pushed you? Because this is one of the few times I've ever seen you come out strong on one side or another on a topic.
Well, I just thought that people were being lazy with the attacks. That's why I think people were being lazy and way too general. And I just thought, you know what? That's enough of it. From the bottom up, I am going to gradually destroy every nonsense that I'm reading step by step until we have cleaned this whole pipeline of dog shit and we end up with what is actually true and supported by the numbers. So some of the statements were, Ziwu is a bad playoff player. Well, I've just proved you wrong over the last 12 months. This is a wrong statement. Do you want to try again? Another one could be, that's because he has bad teammates. Well, I've just proved you wrong again. He's got the higher differential with the rest of the team. And then someone came at me and said, well, look at only the game he loses. And I said, well, I proved you wrong again. He still has the highest number. He has the most difference with his team. So I just gradually destroyed all of these storylines. But the thing, and I think what people are missing, is that I am aware that Ziwu is not a finished product yet. I made a tweet and I was very, very clear about it. He is not in a conversation for greatest of all time currently. I am aware of this, but I've just had enough of people just vomiting shit opinions and being overly general about him. So I try to just recenter the conversation a little bit and let's try to define what is it that we're going after, right? And in some of the elements that you're bringing up, the big events that are missing in his pedigree, yes, of course, that's a problem. Absolutely, that's an issue. then again, we sometimes have a tendency to forget that what you were describing as a liege or device or simple trying to find the good middle ground, that's maturity.
Yes.
That's maturity as a player. We are so crazy sometimes with the expectation that we put on these players. Just because they've had such a astronomical rise, we expect they're already a finished product completely. It takes time. It takes years to find that middle ground where you are a superstar that is putting his imprint on the game, but you are also part of a system. You are a good teammate. You're responsible. It takes a long time. That's also why I made this like funny tweet where I mentioned like time to reach a major, and Simple had 10 participations to win his first major. Device had 10 participations to win his first major. And then I put Devil Walk 1 just to, for fun.
Sure, whatever, to like me. Yeah, of course.
I like the guy, you know. But this is what we miss, right? I think that because...
By the way, off the top of my head, the number for Zero was like 6 or something, right? I think it's like
6 or 7. 6 or 7, yeah. What I'm saying is that we are being unreasonable with the expectations we put immediately on a guy that is still in the year 4 or 5 of his career. Like, where were Simple and Device year 4 or 5? I think Simple, from the very beginning, because of who he is, even as a person, he had already taken over more games. I think it's just his DNA. That's how he plays the game. But some of it, this trophy that we're talking about, to build your cabinet, it takes time. And also, I think the argument of the online-offline era is one that if we're going to use it, which I think is fair, we have to take it both ways. So one way is, hey, let's temper off the MVP account because Zywoo had a bunch of MVP online, and I think it's a fair point. But let's also not forget that he missed on all that experience that is supposed to help him get to that point. A year and a half without Cologne, Katowice, majors, moments, that doesn't come out of thin air. You have to leave these games. You have to play these games, and you have to fuck it up, and you have to realize, wait, hold on a minute, I should have done differently. It takes a while. So my take is that from what I have seen from Zywoo in these relatively short years, even with a lapse of what was it, a year and a half without offline Counter-Strike. So that is one I'll put in parentheses. What I have seen and the reliability and the consistency that he has leads me to believe that there's going to be a day where the conversation is closed. But it's not there yet. I don't think he's there yet. He doesn't have a case. He doesn't have a case for Device. He doesn't have a case for Simple. There's just not enough. But we are unreasonable with what we expect someone to do at this point in his career with 3.5 years of LAN experience. That in itself, I think, is unreasonable. And this is why I try to bring up a little bit more like number-based objective approach and say, okay, what is it that we're talking about? Playoffs game in Cologne and Katowice? Yes, I'm with you. Yeah, I think there's more to be done. There's more attitude to be had in this game. He has to take more responsibility in this moment. I'm with you. Just don't pretend like it's a problem and he doesn't do it now. Are you pretending to me that Simple was doing that immediately from the get-go? Device was a notorious choker in Grand Finals? Why, we just forget about that? It takes time to get to that finished product. And this is what pisses me off. People just treat him like, ha, you can't do it right now. You're a fraud. It's like, bro, just can we have a little patience here and see what he evolves in? And also, I agree with you. Don't call him what he isn't right now, because you're actually undermining him. You're hurting him if you call him that now, because people are going to use it as a weapon against you, and they're going to be right to do so. So you want to pay him compliment, that's fine, but give it time. Time is your best weapon if you're a Zywoo fan. Time is going to play for you.
Yeah, a couple of things there. One, on the device angle, actually, because this is a point I actually have made many times. I think people, maybe it just gets lost on them. Bro, I was the device fucking stan. What are we talking about? Like, me and Anders have picked incorrectly Device and Astralis to win about 10 tournaments, including majors, for years. Like, that's why when it finally happened, it was like, holy fuck, we kept the faith. Like, we've been rewarded by God. But it took years, like you're saying. There was just year after year after year when like, they'd look, it's the same story. It would look awesome in the group stage. They'd beat like a team in the quarters that like is another world-class team. You're like, it's going to happen this time. This is the time. And the problem everyone knows, don't worry, I get it, fans. You don't want to be the guy where when he finally breaks through and is ultimate, like, GOAT level unbeatable, you don't want to be the guy where, like, you weren't the first one to say it. You want to always be like, oh, I claimed that, like. But if you do that, though, like we're saying here, you will misrepresent him early. You know, actually make him and yourself look stupid. So, like, the reason I bring up the device example is Mate, when he used to lose and choke those semis, go watch the desks. I don't come on the desk like, guys, you're running the numbers wrong. If you actually look at this in a different perspective, he was really good in the... I never pretended he carried the games. The joke is, if anything, I was in there with Janko going 10 times harder on him, like, why have you fucking failed the game again? What are you doing? What was going on the, you know, CT side here? Like, if anything, I was fully aware that he had flaws. And the reason why this is so crazy as a topic to me is, this is where people, like, part of it, by the way, as an aside, I think is just a lot of young people now. You notice in general, in every sport, they're obsessed with GOAT discussions, but it's all about current players. Like, that's weird, because I don't know if you know this, but when I grew up, at least in sports, like, for example, when I grew up as a boy watching football in England, the GOAT debate was like Maradona against Pele from a past generation. Mm. Nobody was taking the current mega people like Zidane and Ronaldo. We weren't putting them in that convo, and there was no guy who was like 15 like me coming in going, hey, all you guys, I guess this Pele guy you talk about is good, but what about Ronaldo, you know, number nine Ronaldo? No, they tell you, shut the fuck up. You don't know what you're talking about. You never saw the other guys play. But there is a lot of like impetus, you know, with the modern generation. Like, they want their guy to be the GOAT, right? And I even think they've gone too far. I just translate it as this. When they say their guy's the GOAT, they just mean, I really like this guy. He's my favourite player. But I had to learn with Device. You notice I don't call Device the GOAT, even though I do believe on resume he could easily claim it, right? The reason I don't is because, yeah, he was my favourite player, but I had to learn that is different from, is he the best? Now, when they get really good, there's a temptation to go, I could just make the two things the same. Yeah, we all get that, but especially in our job, we're trying to like avoid or being unduly bowled over by our own personal biases and preferences where possible. So the other reason, even though it'll sound counterintuitive, if you're a ZWU fan, you're actually doing yourself and ZWU a favour. If, like Maniac said here, in the short term, you acknowledge that some of these things have hurt him. Like, for example, the reason why you are ruining your whole case if you say the online era should count is because then he doesn't get any of the stuff Maniac's talking about. If the online era all counts, that number one count, all the MVPs count, all those performances count, and that counts towards sort of his GOAT case. Well, then suddenly Maniac's angle doesn't work anymore. Now I can't go, you got a year and a half robbed from your career. That's actually the better argument if you're a ZWU fan, because what you need to say is this. During that time period when he was either number one or number two, depending on who you are, he would have gotten a lot of very prime opportunities to go to these Cologne, Katowice majors and have a chance to not only win them, but like get over, like exercise these demons, have a third match where he goes. He didn't get that. He was robbed of basically, if we're talking like a year and a half, realistically, two or three majors there. Add in the prestige events, we're talking maybe five or six events here. Now that sucks, because the difference is, even though, yes, Simple, Nico and Device also got them robbed, they'd already had 5 or 6 years. They'd already had, for most players, what would be your fill, your whole career's worth, basically. The key thing is, the best ones to give the example of is, if this was like Cold Zero or Olofmeister and they'd have had a year and a half there, you just don't even have any of the accomplishments. That would be all their MVPs. That would be all their year number one. They would have had their whole prime career. So you actually, as a fan, want to acknowledge that that happened and he got it stolen from him. Because it actually, as you say, it gives a reason as to why. It's not that like he couldn't learn anything, but it put the accomplishment part on stasis. It meant that he was just sort of stuck there and there was nothing to play for. And especially you couldn't get the experience that you're saying. You couldn't even lose and get the experience. Mm. So that is significant. And then lastly, I'll throw this in there. The reason why coming out of the French scene, this is so egregious that people are acting like he's the perfect player, is, bro, if there's any scene I would expect to understand a flawed genius player, it would be the fucking French scene. Do you know who Kenny Essen-Shocks are? If you're a fan of these like I was, these are some, that what part of what makes them so compelling is how flawed they are. The fact that Kenny either just does look perfect and kill everyone, or he'll just be in the same spot, get feeding, he'll just be dying in the same spot, he'll just rush to the same. Like, my joke is, he's the guy who like never saw like a fucking banana angle on CT side Inferno he didn't like, whether he got the kill or died from it. Like, we all know he never did put in the work ethic. Even when he was at his best, you were like, oh, bloody hell, I bet he's not doing aimbots. I bet he's not doing extra things. Shocks, even when Shocks was perfect in the server, then he had all those weird things he would do with what team he would join, or he'd just leave the best team, or he'd play with Smiths again or something. They all had their own weird flaws that both held them back and made them the player they are. Like, we can all acknowledge these aren't perfect players, guys. In fact, one of the beautiful things about Counter-Strike to me is you can even be the absolute best, like ZWU is now, like Nico is now, and there are still some flaws. We can still look at your game and see some areas where it's like, bro, even you could improve. That's how crazy this game is. Like, that's one of the best things about Counter-Strike, by the way. No one will ever hit the skill cap. No one will ever hit the possibilities of what you can do in the game, the decision-making. What's beautiful about the game, as far as I can tell, is it just goes forever. It feels like it's like chess. It just evolves forever, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I also think that one of the argument for Zaibu's case is that as soon as I acknowledge his imperfection, and I truly do, and I will always, some of the things that he already has got on lockdown now is like crazy. Like,
oh, for some sure.
If you think, like, you've just mentioned Kenny and Sharks and how they were geniuses in their own right of the game, but some of the flaws they had were really extremely problematic. Yes. Of course, they were balanced and counterparted by how crazy they could get on the server. But, that in itself, I think it doesn't have the same marketing and the same selling value, but the floor of Zaibu is already so high. It's so high. Can you imagine to have him as a player in your team? And a bad game is 23. Yeah. Where he's got good communication, good attitude, no ego, is just being there as a player, dropping you an AK if he has to. Like, that in itself, it's not marketable. It's not selling. It's not great. No one cares about that. It's not a good argument. But in the reality of Counter-Strike, it does play a role. So what I think he still needs to reach out, or what he still needs to do, there's margin for it. It's like, it's the finest detail. It's like we're talking about a Swiss watch and we're just in the nitty-gritty down there, 4 sub-level, trying to tweak a little bit. And there are some tweaks to be done. But the amount on the checklist that it's already done for someone his age and in his position, that in itself is like, come on, man, that forces just respect. And that's why I think, like, again, time is of the essence for him. It's gonna be great in a couple of years, I think.
And here's where I will agree with you, but I'll only disagree in principle. I actually do agree in this specific case. Like, if I had to pick someone today who is the player of all the best players now, so, like, I mean, Simple's barely in the equation, but he was earlier this year. Yeah. Simple, Nico, all the players that we all know the best now. I mean, you can take modern day ones, Shiro, people like that, right? If I put this list together now, if you have to pick one to be the best in the next 4, you'd easily pick Zaibu. Like, the difference is Nico might extend his prime. Maybe he can do a couple more years, but would he really be the best in 4 years? Now, the reason why I bring this up and say it as a general point, I do think people are very, it's very dangerous when people do this. It's one mistake also Zaibu fans made is after that first year, because it was, by the way, I don't care. People have got to stop doing these like whack short-term narratives. I tried to tell everyone when we came back from online to lands, please stop saying this bit guy is the best rookie ever. Like, that doesn't even make sense. The Zaibu guy, when he was a rookie, was the best in the world. The bit guy isn't even the best on his team. He had Simple next to him. Like, what you mean is he's the best sort of, like, traditional rookie of, like, you just inserted in the squad. Like, Zaibu actually is in his own category for rookies. Like, that first year is impossible. Absolutely. How good he was. But the problem is it baited a lot of people to go either, this is a classic mistake humans make. You know, you can trick people using, like, a graph maniac, where if you plot a graph like this and it starts curving up and then you say, right, I paused there, but what happens next? The human mind goes, the pattern continues, isn't it? So it's like, it must just go. Like, first of all, when you're as good as he was in year one, it's going to be very hard to just get like 1.5 times better each year. So if you already projected that, I think you need to watch a bit more CS. You don't get years like that out of nowhere. And then the other one is, you can never, ever, like, I'll do it with this guy now because I've seen him do it for like 2.5 years, 3 years now without like the online period. Never assume because someone had an awesome year, they'll just do that for 3-4 years more. The thing, I know that we've been ruined by Nico and Simple where they have done that, but like, that's why I call them aliens. Like, I've never seen players like them that are almost impervious to form. They just like, they even have like a bad 3 months, mate, and then just come back and be the best at their role again. Like, normal players don't do that. Even the greatest ever, like my mate Get Right or Colds It, even they have this gradual taper off where it just goes away. Like, they don't just come back 2 years later and be the best player again. Like, that's actually extremely rare. Now, luckily, Zaibu does seem now like he deserves to be in that category. Mm. But if for other players especially, don't ever assume that. Because I've seen this happen with all the stars now, mate. Like, I mean, maybe later we'll talk about Heroic. People like Staun, again, if you were doing the graph, it looked awesome. Mm. But it didn't keep going, did it? It got to that point and it sort of plateaued. It's just stayed at that level now. And he hasn't been able to make the next jump up. So I do think it can be dangerous when you sort of assume someone will do this for the next 3-4 years. But with that said, in this particular case, he's the outlier that I would pick to do it.
I know, and I wanted to bounce back on this because this is actually a thought process that I went through myself. I think some of the criticism that we make to Zaibu are parts of the reason why he is going to remain at that level. Because he is, if you compare Zaibu against Simple, for example, and you're a Simple fan, you have a whole, there are many different ways you can enter the conversation.
Sure.
You can say, oh, he doesn't have these phenomenal moments where he just takes over and he disregards the structure of the game. He just pops off. No, it's true. That's a fact. It happens. It's a more rare occasion. That's true. He's more right decisions, logical move, logical positioning, do your job, consistency, reliable. These are elements that I can imagine going over time. That's what I can imagine happening year one, two, three, sure. four, five, six, seven. I think genius and phenomenal moments are harder to keep up with. Like, not everybody can maintain a very dangerous, aggressive play style where you put yourself in danger all the time and you maintain a great performance at it. You maintain the confidence to do it. It's hard to keep up with that. Some of the criticism that we do towards Iwu, that he lacks a little bit of flair in moments, he lacks some gravitas, some craziness. It's also part of the reason why I think he's never going to drop. In fact, I think I made a tweet where I said Iwu is never going to have a year below the top five as an individual, ever. And I do believe that because some of his...
I just love that this is the only player I've ever seen, bro, that's gotten hot takes out of you. Like, that's a hot, spicy as fuck take. But
I firmly believe it because I think some of the reasons that we criticize him are also some of the reasons why he will remain extremely strong. Because this is kind of who he is. Like, not taking too much space, understanding the system, be where he needs to be, getting that multi-kill. Hey, by the way, AVP and rifle, super underrated topic. He's one of the AWPs out there that has the least kills with the AWP, which, spoiler alert, means that he didn't have kills whenever he's got no money. So many times we've seen players like Shiro and Device struggle because they don't put their hands on an AWP. They don't have the money. They struggle. They have a shit scoreline. Zaiwu will play with a Galil. He'll play with a Famous if he has to. That some of these reasons are like, stabilizer. It's like if I'm talking about a house and I'm looking at the foundations of the house and how strong they are, he's got the strongest foundations.
Yes.
Period. Now we're looking at like luxury balcony and nice little windows. That's what we're trying to build on the house. We're trying to get a little fancy. He needs to add that. But his foundations are so strong. I can close my eyes and look at the stats and he's going to be in the top 10. And I don't even need to think about it. So that's why I can make that risky comment about how I believe his consistency will remain over time. But I agree with you. It's something that is very quickly yielded by people. And I don't think everybody realizes what it means when you say someone is going to be there in 4 years. There's a whole lot that goes into that kind of saying. You have to think about it.
Right, let's do the Ents discussion then. Because one of the problems with the Ents topic for me is this. It's like I said earlier, to me, they model so much like Heroic when they were on top. It's like all the reasons, like if you notice, it's even why the credit seems to funnel all the way to the IGL and the coach, which is the same thing we did with Heroic. Like, it all went to Cadian. Because when you look at them as a team, if we're talking about like proper Counter-Strike, they're playing brilliant Counter-Strike. This is fabulous. Like, it's the same reason why I told people on paper I wanted Heroic to win the Blast Major. Because what I wanted, like I said with that lens before, is if someone came to me as a brand new fan of CS2 and they were like, what was CSGO like? I could just tell them, bro, just go watch the Major Final. Well, see that team Heroic that won? That's how Counter-Strike was played. Like, that was like the best level it got to, where they had all, you know, the utility usage, the rotations, they understood all the trading, they had the map pool, they could win on both sides, the IGL was a great caller, but he could also sort of call from spawn or call and rotate. Everything was there. Loads of these factors are there for Ents. Like, there's so many there I can compliment. Their checklist looks awesome. The problem is, I'm going to spin it from the opposite way. This is a team now where if we only look at what's good about them, they're great. You can make an argument they're number one. They look like, just like Heroic, they also look now, I mean, Heroic, the joke is Heroic's dropped off from this, but they've become the new Heroic. They also have the craziest floor. Like, they feel like a lock to make every semi. In fact, they even do beat the teams that beat them in the final, as long as it's not the final. If you play them in the quarters or something. Like, the joke is they've already beaten Vitality. Like, we know they can. We know they can beat G2. They can beat all these teams. It's that same thing. But there's clearly something happening when they reach these big finals. Like, every time in these finals, like, I think, just like Heroic, this is significant to me. It's one thing if you reach four finals, but you're the underdog every time. Then maybe you shouldn't win any of them. Dude, they looked so good coming to some of these finals. Actually, to only have one title out of it is a bit underwhelming to me. Like, they could have won for real all of them. They could have won two or three. They could have won this one. They could have won the Cologne. These were all right there for the taking for my money. The problem is, though, if we get into some of the specifics of why they didn't, they do lack the superstar player. They don't have the Ziwu guy who pulls your ass out of the fire at the end of a game, or a Nico who just, you know, in the middle of the game is just so dominant it's already over and you steal their map. It's basically like the strengths that get them to that point. If one of them fails, if anything goes off, they become 50% as good when they face this pressure, and when they get the slow start, and then someone's like Sun Pius isn't in the game and he doesn't have his AWP. Like, there's a difference as well. Sun Pius has to have his AWP. This isn't a guy who's like, he's all right with the rifle. He's not some god with it though. Like, his game becomes a lot less, not as good. He's not as good, quite frankly, on T side as well. Like, there are real flaws here. So I want to see what's your temperature check on Ents, because There's so many reasons to fall in love with him, but
I know.
I do think when you have this many chances and you keep blowing it, I know people think it's early in the time to start asking, do they chalk? But like, we sort of do have to ask, because to me, this is a window like now where you could have got a lot of trophies. Like, dude, we could be talking about like, is this going to be like an end series if they don't won like three or four of these titles?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's the right way to approach it, as the problems first. And then we can always pay the compliments that they deserve, because I do think they play close to the most perfect Counter-Strike we have currently. Just if you look at the strategies and the movements and the pathing, it's like, it's, you can almost point to anyone in the game and say, hey, look at how Ence is playing, and that's how Counter-Strike is supposed to be. And I agree with that statement. I think that this game, this grand final against Vitality, hurts more than Cologne, for my money and what it means for Ence. Because when we were in Cologne and we were talking about a best of five going up against a red hot Nico and a great Monesty, it's like, maybe the order is just too tall. Like, a best of five, it's such an incredible, egregious battle where it's very unique to the sphere and the space of Counter-Strike. So I could imagine it was too much. This one was right there for the taking. It was right there for the taking. We're talking about an Ents that beat Vitality at the most important event, a map pool that goes their way, which, by the way, why don't they pick Vertigo? It's there, but they could have completely done it. They go for the same maps again. That's another discussion. But yeah, I think that currently they don't have a team solid enough to withstand the tribulations that is a grand final. And right now it needs to be a perfect scenario for them to win. And I think this was an example. You mentioned Sempius. For my money, he's the only one currently that is starting to establish his dominance and his presence in every one of these games. Even the games against Vitality, his 1.27 rating is very decent, and he's had a few moments. He's one of the only ones that is becoming a go-to, reliable star player in these moments. I love the attitude. I love the difference-making. He's super sharp. He's super out there. He destroyed Zywoo in Cologne. It broke my heart. So he's getting there. But there are still some other players that need to deliver. Like Nerds, for example. I think Nerds is easily. And it sounds like it's a dig, but it's actually a compliment in the sense of we see what he can do at times. We see the magnitude that he can enter in and the kind of impact he can have. In the grand final, this wasn't the Nerds that he could be, quite simply. Just look at how he's playing. Look at how he's been playing up until there. So there are, and I think it's mainly him, if you will ask me, it's mainly Nerds who has this sort of echo chamber, sort of the chamber where he can very much develop in the last game of the tournament. Because I think Madden is not supposed to have incredible numbers. He's a very like role-based player who's taking space and doing the dirty work. And even then, I think his numbers are pretty good in what he's doing. Diha could do better, but I think Nerds is where the room is. That's Nerds.
Yes.
He wasn't there against Vitality. That hurt them massively. If you look at Cologne, that was a completely different story. So they're yet to conquer this grand final. And where I do join your concern is that how much is that hurting them, these grand finals that are passing by and are not winning? And how much is it actually becoming its own monster in their own heads? You know,
yes,
the whole saying of like there's a snake under the rug, and then it becomes a bigger snake, and it's like a dragon at the end that's eating the house. That's how I worry about Ents just a little bit, because if they keep not winning while playing their best, then we're going to have to see how they deal with it, both internally and, of course, like individually. That worries me a tad. And the only reason that I am not so harsh and critical over Ents is that this grand final had a 45-minute to one-hour technical break in the middle.
That was a nightmare, yes.
In the middle of the second map, where Ents were technically still in a winning position after winning map one. Look, for my money, this is... I mean, I'm an old-school player, Duncan. I come from the time where we would have one-hour break very regularly in games. So as far as I was concerned, part of being a professional was being able to reset your brain and get back into it. I think it's a skill set that you need. But I would be remiss not to mention the fact that this whole grand final took a weird turn after this break, and then Vitality were the one fully in control after this, and they smashed them. That's the only reason I'm taking a pinch of salt with that one.
Because I
think it has to be considered. But other than that, yes, I think the window is slowly closing. And if you are playing good, or let me rephrase, if you're playing very good and not winning, then doubts start creeping in and you start doubting things you shouldn't be doubting. Is it the system? Is it the strategy? Am I being put in the right position? You start imagining issues, imagining problems. And that could come creeping for Ents, because after all, they had a few chances now to win big trophies.
Yeah, on the thing of like the pause, basically, if people don't know, it's a very famous concept in American sports where like you take a timeout to cool off the other star player just to sort of make him think for 20 seconds and, you know, you don't just let him keep scoring baskets or whatever the particular sport is. So I will say in general, if you do a massive tech pause like that, especially because the problem with the tech pause is it's indeterminate. No one knows when it will end. It could end in 4 seconds or it could end in 40 minutes. And in this case, it was more towards the latter than the former. The nightmare there is one, especially if you're a casual fan, the rule is you can't talk during a tech pause. So you just sat there in your own head. It's not even like you're having a discussion. It's not like a timeout. Like, well, you know, like when we come back to when you do it. No, like you just all sat there sort of waiting and whatever internal dialogue's all you've got to keep yourself sustained for the next 40 minutes. In general, I would say as a general principle, that will always favour the more experienced team and core because they, like you say, they've been there, they've won the championships, they know what it's like to have this. If you're the up-and-coming team, the problem is, even though it sounds just like so immature and childish, you are going to have a very human reaction. Your reaction is going to be like, but I'm up a map and I've almost won map two. That's the sort of thing where like a super pro can do the hard reset. It's why I've always said the best teams, you can't do what, even though I don't blame you because it's human nature, but I actually hate it when you guys on the desk, when map one, someone gets obliterated and then you go like, well, if it's going to be like that, it's going to be a quick 2-0. It's like, if we talk about the elite teams, they reset between maps. Like a new map will be a new day to them. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be a total, you can still have to earn it against the next map. It's not really going to carry the momentum of the last map. But if you're the underdog team and you're less experienced players, in a way, you really just want it over as soon as possible. Like, you don't want to go, okay, it's okay that I was leading, but that's sort of taken away from me now. And then they came back. That's fine. You know, one map for the championship. It's just the third one. No, in your brain, you should have won 2-0 or you almost did. And that is so insidious if you let that get into your head. It's the reason why the top pros, a lot of what those sports psychology people do, if you don't get it, guys, they're not actually doing movie stuff where they do a speech and it rouses you. It's the opposite. If anything, they're teaching you how to sort of go to a baseline and how to anchor yourself and how to understand, like, you don't have to like there's a saying in the occult, this will say like a weird digression, there's a saying in the occult, right, that goes that any action that you take without the lust or desire of result is the purest action you can take, because even when you want to win the game and that's why you're trying so hard, if you grasp too hard like that greedily, it'll go through your fingers like sand, mate. You'll lose it. In that scenario, what actually makes you win is being able to just sort of go, right, each round, what are the right moves to play, what's the right thing, forget that we've got a lead even. How do we close this game? I mean, mate, in a minute we'll talk about some of the teams who blew their leads, the G2s and the Virtus Pros. Like, these are teams as well, we're on paper. You had the game. You might have thought it was over. And actually, this is why we'll talk about these two teams. The different responses to how they tried to win or not win the game actually will haunt them later on. They won't be able to come back, like I'm saying, and go, you know, we gave ourselves a good chance on all these scenarios and, you know, tippy hat, the other team just won. No, some of them will be haunted by decisions they made on force buys or did they make a play and stuff. So to me, that's the part that's changed here. The problem with NC is they do feel that they are massively the team where it's like, if you cool them off like this and let them think, I've seen it in all these finals now. It's why when they get the slow start, even they're not coming back like they would, mate. A really elite team, let's take these teams like G2 and Vitality. It's hard to keep these teams down, mate. You don't just run off 10 rounds against these guys. You know what I mean? Like, eventually it's going to break. They're going to get money. They're going to get, like, someone's going to win a clutch, a big name player. They're going to switch halves. Something's going to happen that's going to reset the game. The problem for Ents is, it feels like by the time they get into some of these games, it's almost over. Like, it really has. The ship has almost sailed. It's right on the horizon and you're almost too late. And Nerds is a big factor because I feel like we're being really unfair to Nerds. One thing I always try to explain to people is teams have an expectation level based on the whole roster, but individual players have a different timeline. So in the same way as on the past episode, I pointed out, Hooksy's expectations and timelines are actually very different to Nico's. Nico's is he has to win the major. That's it. It's the ultimate expectation. The actual expectation for Hooksy is more like do a good job and win some tournaments and get in a position to win. And if you do that, you probably did your job. Like, he has a lower and different set of expectations. So similarly, for Ents, the squad, because we all remember back when they had Hades and Spinks, they were sort of already almost in this position. They were getting really quite good, and then Spinks left, and then they kicked Hades, and they made these changes, and they're back again. We all want them now to just go, right, now just take that last step and be the best. But the problem with that is, I can't say that to Nerds. Dude, he only joined the team in like February or something, and before that, It's not a joke, guys. He was playing on Endpoint. It wasn't like, at least Flames was on OG. This guy was playing like tier three, essentially. Like, I can't say to that player, well, you've made a few finals now. Where's the 1.3 rating? Where's the MVP? It's like, it's actually totally fair to him that he's still tracking upwards. Like, to me, if he was in almost any other team, like, here's the best way to think of Nerds. If he was on, like, a team that had come in the quarterfinals here, like a lesser team, you'd go, great performance, can't wait to see more from you. But now I have to say, you have to just win the tournament and be the MVP, mate. You're actually, for real, we're expecting you to actually outdo Zero in this final. Not even just play well, you're supposed to actually beat that guy and take the MVP. Like, that's an incredibly high set of expectations to put on someone. And I even feel like he's being a bit fucked over, because since his nationality is the same as Sphinx, who was the previous Rifle star, bro, he isn't Sphinx yet. First of all, they have a very different style of player. They're almost the polar opposite players. One's like the entry player, one is like the lurker. And then secondly, Sphinx, to me, is someone where, like, he certainly had his issues fitting into Vitality, but to me, he had a much more established game. I do think Nerds is like an incredibly, I know this is a term that people have abused in sports, but I don't. I think he's an incredibly mercurial player. He just has those games where he is outrageous and his aim's just sick, and you think, fucking hell, this is the next Nico Sphinx accent, this is the next God Rifler. But then he also has the games, you see it sometimes in semis and finals. By the way, this is how I know Ence is legit. In Cologne, he actually had a mad quiet semi against Vitality, but they still got through the game without him needing to do it. He can have games where he just disappears and he's just whatever. But the problem is, to go back to the whole like Zero angle, you can see his ability level, though, is higher than almost everyone on this team. Like, for me, like, I'm with you on the St. Pius one. I don't call St. Pius the best AWP. I just think he's a big game player. And I think that is a distinction we need to make. By the way, shout out, since he just retired, that is what Flusher would be considered as. I never actually personally thought Flusher was better than Crimson Roloff. But I'll tell you what, if you want a big game performance in, like, a semi of a major, this is your guy. By the way, that's what makes it so unfair. That he's not even their best player, but he might just pop off and carry the game with, like, a plus 20 or something. St. Pius is that guy for me. Like, I don't expect him to be the Zero with the team and he has to carry every time. If he just gives me I'm with you. The performances he's already given in the big game, that's enough. Give me that and Sphinx and Snappy and all the rest of the team, and I'm with you. It's mainly the Nerds angle I'm looking at. I'll give a slight pass, though. I will give a little bit of flame to Dekar, though, which is, to me, he's like the impact player on this team. If you see the way he plays, especially on T-side, sometimes he just straight entries, mate, and he just opens the game. But I have noticed if he has a bad game, they also will struggle. Like, he's in the one where, because I'm with you, the rest, actually, Sun Pius, Madden, and Snappy, I don't even think they're ever playing bad in these games, mate. They still play good even in these finals. Like, look at they're doing their job. It's why, in a way, I can be quite confident about Ents. Like, I don't think they have to have, like, the superstar. They don't really need it to happen, but this is what tears me up. I can't tell if they're this close and they're going to break through next event and win and it'll all be great. Or if, like, this was the height and then now we're all going to be looking back in 3 months like, oh, what could have been? What's your sense? Like, which way do you go on that one?
So it's going to sound a little bit counterintuitive, but I think what Ents need more than anything is not like a statement win in a grand final 16-16-6. They need a hard-fought battle, losing their map pick hard all the way through, pushing back to win. I think they need that more than the easy win. Because I think they've already established that when things are rolling, it's like, what the hell are you supposed to do? Like, Snappy's calling amazingly, still probably a little bit underrated in his calling. Switch of rhythm, like switch of pace, the best that we have in the game right now. Close to Heroic, probably better than Heroic right now. Changing the pace incredibly. When things are firing up, you have Diha with the multi-kill, Sampaias, big game player, Nerds. Like, all of these things, that's all fine. I'm wondering about if someone comes to me and say, hey, Ents is playing like hell or playing like shit, then I need to know who I believe in when Ents is struggling. I need to know, what am I going to see from an Ents that's struggling? And this is still something that's yet to be
So you want, like, like a big comeback third map win or, like, the OT victory, something like this, right? To, like, a character win, right?
And this is probably where I think the angle of attack against Dehyze takes all of its sort of, like, life in certain stuff. I've seen him take over games, but I feel like whenever the team dips, so does he.
Right.
And we would need to talk to him. We'd need to talk to his teammates. Maybe we'd get like an internal sort of observation on the whole situation. But I feel like he gets impacted by what's happening in the game. And then when you move on to map number three, after a weird map number two, probably a little bit frustrating, then he ends up with 11 kills. And I've seen that happen more than once. So that in itself has to be addressed, and it can't happen, basically. because a team is never as good as its weakest link in the horrible, most horrible moment. And this is how I value a team. And this is why we, you and I, we're making the distinction with G2 and Vitality. Because I could look at Vitality and G2 losing right now, and I know there's plenty of different assets, plenty of different cards that could pop off, and then we're right back on track. A couple of rounds being won, and then you can feel. For Ents, we are yet to see that. We've seen them take over games. When things are going well, it's beautiful. We've even seen them in high, like stake on stake. Like the phase game on Ancient is a good example. The against Vitality, the double overtime against Heroic as well in Gamer State. Like things are really escalating and they can keep up with the intensity. We know they can do that. The last page is being able to come back from a horrible situation where things are going against you and nothing is working and you're missing all your shots. And then see them come back from this. Because once they do it and they start having an actual feeling, like an intrinsical feeling that they can do it, this is going to be the next level. For as long as they don't have it, they're going to be an easy team to discard in the last match, because you're thinking there are too many scenarios in which things will go to hell and they cannot come back. Yes. And the truth is, at the level that Counter-Strike is right now, it is very unlikely that you're going to play a grand final or a semi-final and things are going to go only well for you. That's just the way the game is. And I need to be able to bet on them when things are going to hell, which I am not quite there yet. And that's what I think they need. I think they need a hard-fought win where they suffer and sweat and it looks like they're going to mess it up and the comeback is against them. And I think this is what they would need more than anything, to prove to themselves that they can do it even when things don't go their way. The way we always say, a team is supposed to win with their B play.
Yes,
not even exactly. Their A game. When you're able to do that, that's it. You're going to start establishing yourself as a title winner and you're going to be out there racking up titles. That's a step that I think is yet to be taken by Ents.
Yeah, as well as the idea, like you said earlier, like they probably are at this point in their own heads about these finals and the big pressure games, because everyone, like, it's not like they're oblivious to the fact they're losing these guys and that they could have won them or that it's an opponent they've beaten before. But the other angle as well to factor in is when you do that enough times, it also gets in your opponent's head. Like, if I'm a G2 or a Vitality and I play Ents tomorrow in a big match, here's what I'm thinking if they win map one. Just hold in there. If we can just hold in there and somehow get it to a map three, they're going to give us a chance. There's going to be a moment where it'll go bad for them. They'll start slow. Someone will miss a kill. Someone won't get their weapon. They're going to give us the opportunity, which is, by the way, what happened to all the Chalk teams in history, the old Astralis, etc. I can tell you those NIP and Virtus Pro guys behind the scenes used to laugh before Astralis overcame that and won and go like, bro, we love playing these guys because we know even if they come out of the gate super hot, can they maintain it? Can they really just 2-0s and 16 to us? Probably not. They're probably going to give us a chance in the game. We're probably going to go to our map and eke out a win. And if we just do, all we have to do is survive, and then they'll just give us a chance to win the game. And that's what they're thinking. And unfortunately, when the opponent knows that, it's like you're saying about winning like a big like statement game. Until you do that, until you sort of go into the fire of like the big game like that, like, by the way, the G2s and the Vitalities had in this tournament run, until you have that, you're not really going to truly win their respect. Like, they'll say you're one of the best teams too, but they also know in the back of their mind, like, we're supposed to beat you. No matter what the rankings say, no matter what your semi-final, we're supposed to win this one. So that is a concern for me, but it's understandable. Though, remember, Ents wasn't even supposed to be in this position.
No.
There's another factor I'll throw in is, I actually think the reason why it's very interesting, I'll say the next 3 to 6 months for Ents, is because finally they have a true window to keep these five players and at least go for this Mania. Because this is actually a mega positive for them, is that if you look at the other teams, the three orgs most likely to steal their players, if you wanted to take a Snappy, a Nerds, a Sun Pius, would be Vitality, G2, and FaZe, just based on like the international rosters, the draw of the thing, the salary. None of these teams, in theory, are going to take those players right now. G2 and Vitality are sticking, so they're already set. FaZe doesn't look like they want to make a swap, and especially not do a gamble. So right now, you're at least going to get a crack at it. You're at least going to get to actually play the tournaments, because the bummer, obviously, would be to have what happened with Sphinx, which is like, if Nuts does get it together, then it's like, well, bon voyage, it was nice seeing you. Hope we can find the next one, because that can't last forever. So to me, they do have a win door for this finally. Like, I don't think, if I look at it, there's a reason why one of their players should be taken now, etc. And that the reason why this is big is, look, I won't oversell it. This isn't like 3 years ago. Ents isn't really paying pennies. Like, as far as I know as well, as the team's gotten better over the last couple of years, they've used the sticker money, etc., to like pump the salaries up, and they've got like way more competitive salaries. But they, to some degree, I have to give them credit in the sense that they are like a Heroic when Heroic first hit the top. These were the teams working on a way smaller budget. It's not just the players you can even get. It's even the players you have, you're paying a smaller salary. If people don't know, back in 2020, when that Heroic team first hit number one online, I think off the top of my head, when I'd looked into it, they were paying like 7.5K a month salary or something. This is when FaZe used to pay 25K to come like four places below in the tournament, you know. Like, if you can do that on a budget, that is incredible. So to me, this is your window right now. If you do this right, you can actually, you don't have to even be number one and win all the titles. You just have to win some titles. If you can just win this one and then you lose that one, you win the next one, you lose a semi here, but you win a final. Like, basically, if you can be a true contender for the next major, I know it's a long time away now, which is unfortunate, but
I know.
If you can be in that position, then this could be a really special project. Because I do think, like I said, to come all the way back to the beginning. On the upside, mate, the way they actually play the game, though, is mesmerizing, mate. This is why I get why people are making the argument. I'd probably have to side with them myself. Maybe Snappy just is the best IGL, mate. I gave the same props to Cadian when Heroic was at their absolute best. Like, you can tell this isn't just people shooting people. There's real thought behind this, and the way they play off. I also think another thing like Heroic that I've got to give props, the way they play with each other, it's so impressive. Like, these are, people don't understand, when you have big name players, it's tough to get them to actually play like proper Counter-Strike. A lot of them are in their own little world of, how am I going to get my kill, or what are you going to do to get me into this position?
Yep.
The way this team plays is beautiful. Like, you can tell this is a team where you would love to play in a squad like this, mate.
No, I agree with you. And I think Heroic and Ents have so many similarities in sense of having an identity and a philosophy and sticking to it. And just buying into it. And this is the Counter-Strike that we play. It doesn't matter if it requires me to sacrifice myself for this round. This is what we need to do. And it's going to work out. That's the pluses. The minuses, unfortunately, is that when you put them and you compare them to the likes of G2 or Vitality, is that for these teams, you have at times players who just take over the round. I'm not talking about a game. I'm talking about a round. And in a moment where the blueprint, the plan of the map, is just not navigating you to the win. It's just not going to happen. You can't anymore. Whatever it is that you wanted to do, it just doesn't work anymore. You're going to need someone to have an individual move that's going to make a difference. And this is where big teams like G2 and Vitality maybe have a deeper, gear that they can activate in terms of individual. I also wanted to say, I think it's a good argument you're making about whether or not this team is going to stick together, because currently they might be safe. But I'm going to make a point. I'm going to have to take that this security isn't going to last too long.
Okay.
If they struggle to actually find the success that they probably know or believe that they should have because of the improvement that they've gone through, because of the performance that they've had, the more time passes and if disappointments pile up, they're going to become vulnerable to the interest of other teams out there. And maybe now is not the most competitive knit tight moment where everyone is looking to grab the next new player. But if you're a team and your Oper is struggling a little bit, some bias is right there. If you want to bet on the future, Nurse seems like a safe bet. I don't think any of them would answer the call of FaZe today. I don't think they would. But if we fast forward in 6 months, and what we're talking about has happened five more times.
If they don't win the titles, yes.
And they start themselves doubting that they are going to take that next step, then I think it's going to get real dangerous. So I think they're safe right now as a team. And I really hope that all of these players are still fully buying into the system and really committed towards each other, and they're going to try to together make that step. That's the romantic in me that hopes that happens. But if it doesn't, man, the sharks are going to come circling in.
Yes.
And you have a Brokey that is starting to be a little bit fading in phase. We don't really know what's going to happen. Hey, is maybe Rain? Should we look for a replacement right now? Hey, these are the players that people are going to come knocking at the door of. Like, Flames was snatched by Vitality. There's other players out there. Nurse, Sampires, I think. If you have an unlimited checkbook, maybe that's where you're going for the future.
Yeah, that's also the other thing I would say that is how you know that this isn't a team Ents that's loaded with like superstar talents is this is why like Heroic to me, they're so legit. Every time they win a map, it's like, I know I can download that demo and it's going to make perfect sense how they won. Mm. They might have the odd round where someone won a 1v2 or got a flocky kill, but like, what is like their imprint is going to make sense. The way they actually like trade is going to make sense. The utility user. The difference is when I look at G2, the reason why everyone wonders, how can they win events and you love Nico, but then you think G2 is not that good? Because people like Nico and Monacy just steal your maps every now and then. Like, the amount of times I've seen G2 just like win on like some bullshit, like Anubis. And it's like, I don't even think they know how to play that map that well, mate. But when you have players like this, they can just rob a map for you out of nowhere. teams like Ents aren't doing that. They're not like tripping over and winning a map accidentally. Like that's not even in their playbook, as it were. So let's talk about G2 then. This is the other one I want to talk about, because let's be real. There is a very real world, like you said, where G2 is the one in the final. It's a rematch of Cologne. That would have been the final. Like there was a point in that Mirage game. I mean, they had a really nice first half, and then they were just, mate, this is actually one where if I was like a fan of Huxley, I would be really tortured by this particular end of the game, mate, because we're in so many winning positions. Like, it's not just like on the scoreboard as well, mate. Because like I said, T-side on Mirage still can be more tricky than people realize. Like, I'm sick of people, I'm not trying to make my own Zonix law, but I am sick of people seeing the scoreboard get to like 12 or 13 rounds and acting like you've won already. It's like, mate, you have not won already. You have got like a couple of real rounds of Counter-Strike to win, or have like a player just do some insane shit before you've actually closed this game. And the most dangerous is when you're right at the finish line, and you, as Virtus Pro, when we'll get to them later, you might think you've won, you haven't yet. So, but the difference is, even in game scenarios, dude, how many times did they get an opener on T side of Mirage? How many times did they kill Ziwu and have like, by the way, when someone like Ziwu is the best player in the world, if you have him dead and his team's on CT side, that's supposed to be a round conversion right there. Like, you're not going to get many chances like that. Like, they had a bunch of scenarios where you would, if you pause the game, and I'll show you how many, the numbers advantage for them, like, even sometimes, so the buys were dodgy from the teams. You would think, like, they surely get this done. So I have to say, some of this I look at in this match against Vitality. And look, I'll do the fair part, which is this. I won't totally blame G2 or take it from Vitality, because spoiler, when we talk about Virtus Pro later, the same thing happened between G2 and Virtus Pro. Like, Virtus Pro probably should have won and then sort of scuffed it at the end, and then G2 came through as the heroes. So these teams got to be on both ends of the equation. But I really actually think, like, G2, part of me feels like they blew it. On the other hand, because some of the OT kills, especially, it's in regulation, I think they blew it, Maniac. In regulation, I genuinely think they blew the game. In OT, listen, it's like they, put it this way, God did that. Like, you can't anticipate what Ziwu was going to do there, and the kills he got, and the way he got. And that scenario, for the OT, I do just tip my hat if I'm G2. Like, you played better, you deserve it. It's like tennis. Too good, you know, props. But the regulation one, that would haunt me a little bit, mate. Like, I feel like this game was right there for them.
I know. And I, to this day, look, I wasn't working the desk. I was watching this game from my hotel room. And I feel like I've entered some sort of a trance, because I don't feel like I have the exact, you know, good like memory of what happened. Okay. I just remember watching this game thinking, wait a minute, there's no way they're actually coming back into this. There's no way it's going to happen. And this is actually where I think Vitality as a squad, and I'm going to say Vitality minus Ivo, deserves a whole lot of credit, because they just bought enough time for him to have a couple of rounds, for him to have a couple of moments. And I think when people say, oh, just the overtime, it's not just the overtime. It's also the last three rounds before, where he starts to have these entry kills and he starts having these impacts. And I think that, and this, I'm going on a very big limb here and I might be completely wrong, but I have the feeling that maybe G2 felt that Ziwu was waking up towards the end, and the window was closing and they were about to win, and now he's starting to find these entry keys and he's starting to be more active. You know, when you're a player, you sense that in a game.
Yeah, for
like
sure.
I have played against Simple. Like, I know what it is when the guy against you just gets in the zone, and every round you're just like, holy shit, like, what did he just push ramp? What is he underground? I think they started to realize that this was happening and he was coming alive. And I think they should have just nipped it in the bud immediately. Just win it over in regulation. This was the moment. Just close it in regulation. As soon as you go to overtime, the whole story just changed, because Vitality had just survived an incredible position, came back, stabilized. I was catching on fire. He's doing it. I could see it happen. I thought the overtime was done already. But what I still struggle to understand is how they were not able to convert after having these four rounds won in a row on the T side, middle of the half, second part of the map. They have four rounds in a row that they win, and the rounds that they win are clean as hell. We're talking peak G2.
Yes.
This is where I am just face-palming myself, watching Ziwu die to, as I said earlier in this podcast, I don't even think he was.
Oh, some of their takes were excellent. Yeah. Like, I'll give props. I don't know if it's Huxley making the call, but the B takes of G2 were very impressive.
Absolutely. Jesus Christ. They had such a rhythm, and like, they knew when to call the bluff of Vitality and go straight for that B split. They just took the space towards short. Nico was fighting. Hunter was fighting from short, finding kills. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh my God, this is it. Like, we're not going to stop these G2. They've entered the zone where the calls are correct, the entries are correct, the utility is perfect, the pacing is... I don't even know what Vitality did to come back into this. And it's like my brain just kind of vanished this moment of the game. And just I opened my eyes and suddenly we were in overtime. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. We actually survived this? We actually did? Because G2 had everything they needed. So was it the case of them at the time maybe feeling just a little bit like it was done already? Because, again, we're talking about winning 5 rounds out of 6 halfway through the second half, which means a broken CT economy. It's a dream scenario. You've basically checkmate the defense in 3 different gun rounds. They've rebought again. You check them again. You stop the AWP trying to peek you. You beat that again. They've done everything they needed to win. And it was just this last step.
Yeah, a couple of things on that. One thing I would say is this is why I said after the Cologne one, dude, I actually think Nico might be in his prime now, as ridiculous as it sounds. Like, his level's just impossible. Like, he's just gotten too consistently good. I actually feel so bad for him with the way this series ended. He played a great series. He even played a great third map. Like, he did everything you could ask for. The player that actually let me down was Monacy at the end of that particular game. But this is where I will put this in context in lieu of our discussion earlier about Ziwu. Guys, Monacy has played for real. Remember, his first big LAN was Katowice last year. That's in like latter part of February of last year. That means this guy hasn't even done a year and a half of like proper big LAN tournaments. And we are telling him basically, forget the Ziwu thing where he had a few years. You're just supposed to also now just win all the games. Like, take over, bro, you know, just dominate the game. Like, sadly, unfortunately, this is where, again, expectation-wise, his expectations aren't the same as Nico and G2 overall. Like, he's still tracking as a great player. And obviously, he's very good in other matches. But this was a match where he didn't really do a lot for me at the end of this game. He did go a bit missing. And that does sometimes happen. It's one of the reasons why in that team, I don't just make it only unfair on one angle. It's not just like, look, Hooksy, you got all these star players, you idiot. Just let them kill everyone. No, because someone like Monacy, to me, needs some direction, clearly. Like, he's not actually, he didn't just come out the womb just knowing what to do in every scenario. He's got the skill set out of the womb, seemingly. He's a prodigy, as far as I can tell. But this is where also, this is where Cassad, I thought, did a really interesting analytical aspect. Cassad came up with this concept that when we're talking about, like, we all do this, we tend to mistake, because it is what generates the stats, like, skill for how good you are at Counter-Strike. And those aren't totally the same thing. Like, basically, Cassad thinks when someone comes along like this, who has, like, absurd aim, you should just say they're sharp. You shouldn't say they're really good at Counter-Strike, because essentially, they do lack all the things that like a veteran has. Like, the obvious example would be, like, it might sound cliched, but someone like NBK has absolutely forgotten more about Counter-Strike than Monacy will, like, has ever known. Like, because NBK's played for like 15 years. Like, it doesn't matter, he can't do what Monacy can do. His understanding of what to do in a scenario, what to do with a CT setup when it doesn't work, how to support someone, it's on another level. Whereas Monacy, it's a little bit more sort of limited at the moment. He's got his, like, it's a little bit more one-dimensional. He's fabulous in certain ways, but then we all make the mistake of thinking that means he should be a complete player. He should have everything in his arsenal. And if you notice, a topic we're getting into here with Monacy and Ziwu is when players are younger in their career, probably the hardest thing to overcome is when you're not having a good game. Because in that scenario, what do you do? Do you do what you always do? Well, maybe that just keeps going as a bad game. Do you, like I said about the Nico example, do you sometimes try and do more? Do you try and say, right, this game's getting away from me? Because I'll tell you what, sometimes that's the game that makes you look the silliest, is when you try all these crazy pushes and plays, and I've seen Yekindar do this many times. I know he's trying to win the game, guys. He's not actually being an idiot feeding. He's thinking, it's not working for me, so I've got to try something. The problem is that looks the worst when it doesn't work. On the other hand, if you do nothing and you're very passive, you might get away with not getting blamed, but your team, at least, is going to go like, come on, mate. Like, you could have done something here, or what were you doing this deal? So I feel like the Monacy question's one that is, people have done this thing where, because they call him the baby goat, we're putting too much expectation on this guy too, mate. We're making it like he has to today be simple. And it's like, he is very young in his career, mate. And also, he's playing an international team. He's a Russian player. I give this guy a lot of leeway. Like, I don't blame him for these ones, but I do think he went missing in this one.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think what you mentioned is like how to handle yourself when you're not having a good game. And also it's a semifinal or grand final of an event. And you are very aware of the consequences of you having a bad play. I think one of the final steps of being a complete superstar is being able to retain lucidity in moments where you feel like the game is getting away from you. And so many players either go in fight or flight mode. They either play over passive or they play over aggressive. So they don't have to deal with that pressure. And this is where I believe that over time he's going to become more and more valuable, is that you're probably going to start seeing him racking up a couple of kills the easy way when things aren't going his way, not the Monacy way. Because I've always been, my only issue with him, and I don't think it's an issue, it's more probably an issue of the community and how we see him, is that because of how spectacular he is, I think this has a halo effect on how people view him, right? And it's great to have the multi-kiss. It's great to have the flick and have these moments where probably he and only he can do that. But this is the tip of the iceberg. This is not what wins you events.
Yes.
It can, when you're having a good game, it's what's going to get you 2.2 rating or whatever the hell, and we know he can do that. But what about when you're struggling and you don't have the money and it's the first time you put your hands on an AWP and the score is 0-5 and... Do you want to? Are you going to be aggressive? Do you risk to lose that AWP? But if you're passive, then are you really helping your team? Like, these are so many equations that you have to solve as a player, and that comes with experience, which I don't think he's there quite yet. I'm not going to say he disappears completely, but still, you can feel the difference in terms of moments, yes, where he's in the zone and when he isn't, and that is always going to be a problem for a team like G2, because if you're Hooksy or if you're Nico or if you're Hunter, you don't really know what you're going to get out of the guy quite yet. It's a hard moment. We're going to get the good money see, the bad money see. And depending on the answer you get, then the game plan makes sense or not. How much responsibility are we putting on the guy? You're going to play that area of the map alone. That means you may get to do the right decisions. You get to be solid. Or you're going to give away your life or be too passive. I think we have to give him some time. That was a relatively lukewarm game overall against Vitality. Also, someone that is apparently immune to criticism as well. JKS was far away from his Katowice JKS grand final performance, because honestly, even before the grand final, I played the devil's advocate. You know, people were telling me, hey, Zywo always sucks in last game, and I put the four last stats of the grand finals of G2 to show that Nico was never at the top or whatever. I just played a little bit around. Matter of fact, JKS was always there with Hunter.
Like, yeah, all the he was previous... always bringing the level of the team up. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Previous grand finals, he was always up there. Probably unsung hero. Definitely a candidate for MVP in Katowice, although Hunter got it. Well, this was far from being a MVP performance. I mean, he was on the CT side. He's supposed to be referred as one of the strongest, most solid players that you have. None of that. I mean, was it 11 kills total? No, 6 kills total on the CT side on the entire map of Mirage. That in itself is an issue. Vitality is not supposed to have such great time when challenging him in his positions. So yeah, he also under-delivered. I think it's only fair that we mention it, because I'll be the first one to give him the props, but then we're being hypocrite if we don't mention this as, in itself, a little bit of a failure individually.
Yes. Right, let's do it. I've referred to it earlier, but I do want to actually talk about, we're going in order here, about the match that happened with Virtus Pro and G2. Now, I will say, this is where you know it's been way too long since Virtus Pro was in the big tournaments and had the big finishes. I don't think people are aware, Maniac. People keep forgetting. Kicker isn't actually in this lineup, guys. Like, it's a bit like the Boston Cloud9 thing. Like, they're just standing in. I know they are the classic players that used to be in the team, but like, they're not actually current active players. So, first of all, on that grounds, I will just immediately say, blanket props to Virtus Pro. I think they actually played a very good tournament. They could have been in the semis. Who even knows at that point in time? I mean, they've actually always been a team that, funnily enough, these big dogs like the G2s and Vitality, it can be tough to face up. And this is exactly the team you don't want to play. This is the bird that goes in the engine and ruins your little plane and you have to crash land. Like, that, in that sense, great performance in general. But if I actually look at the particulars of how the end of this game went, like, the joke is, this is like they were trying to give G2 their character moment, Maniac, to make them believe that they can win the tournament. Because mate, this game on Vertigo at the end of this decider was so close to won, it is ridiculous. And I can't believe the way VP gave this away. Like, on the one hand, props to G2. They definitely made some winning players and people had some big moments. But, like, first and foremost, before we even get into, like, decisions in the game, what, mate, normally one thing I have massive respect for with VP is, because they're going to have these crazy draw, slap down, crazy, like, war of attrition fights, normally they're pretty good at knowing when to save James Orp, when to do the buy. Some of these buys on CT side at the end of this game were criminal, mate. Like, they didn't even give them a chance. Like, they had a bunch of rounds where they had, like, 3 FAMAS. They had rounds where they had pistols. Like, there was some way where it's like, I get that you're on the scoreboard, you think you're in good position, but, mate, you weren't at 15. You were at, like, 10 or 12 or something. Like, I don't know what this is like. I mean, people on the cast were trying to comment, like, did Fame just, like, force buy too early or something? In general, if you look at their buying strategy, they just force bought the whole way down until they lost every round. Like, this was really underwhelming to me. I don't know. To me, that feels really uncharacteristic. I feel like this is the team normally that would do, like, the double save, or do, like, you know, you do, like, just, like, a scout on someone, or when they were doing, like, armor and MP9 buys. It's not the last round. Like, I'm really shocked as to why they took this. Like, because here's the thing. In the bar, you're actually being awfully aggressive there for me. What did you think of the way this game went? Like, I was kind of shocked, bro. I thought, like, they're sending G2 home here, mate.
I'm with you. I had two ways to look at it. I had two angles to it. One, and I think they fell victim to it, is the sort of sunk cost fallacy where you feel like you're close to breaking and you're close to winning that round. And you're in that semifinal and you're very close to beating G2 and you can see there is a way, and then you just get baited into buying more. And the illusion of safety that you have on the scoreboard, which you mentioned, gives you the impression that you basically have an unlimited amount of lives in the game that you're playing, which isn't the case. Like a game of Counter-Strike is decided on 5 to 6 gun rounds max. The rest are half-buy, pre-buy, even full eco. So I think probably they thought of themselves a little bit too safe and thought that they could crush G2 earlier, which in a way, if you think about it, and then it's me getting a little psychological here, but that's also a way to kind of avoid the pressure. You know, if you're trying to close when you still have... Exactly. You're trying to close the whole conversation when you still are in a comfortable position so that everyone feels great, rather than eco, so you end up at 11-11 and the stakes are really high up. So it might have been a bit of a playing their own minds in here. And also another aspect, something that I brought up at the desk as well, it's possible that VP being one of the most characteristic team in its own way, like VP is truly VP, the one and only team. It's not the case with a whole lot of teams. Some teams are hard to define. Sure. Some teams can be unpredictable. You don't really know what's going to happen. VP isn't really in that category. You play against VP, I think, as an opponent, you have a relatively clear idea of what's waiting for you. Long,
I mean, the joke is people say that cliche, don't they? They're like, you know what they're going to do. You just can't stop it. It just works, you know?
Exactly. So I think when you play against VP and you have that clear idea, maybe, just maybe, James try to say, you know what, for these at these specific moments, we're gonna throw the
second guess himself.
Exactly. Right. They're going to think we're going to play slow. They're going to think we're going to play eco, because this is what VP would have done 9 rounds out of 10. But this round, we're buying MP9 anywhere in your face. And I can respect it. The problem is, at some point, you have to pull the lever. Like, you have to pull the ejection seat. Listen, this doesn't work. Everybody relax. We take a double eco. We put James on the AWP again, and it's going to be fine. And I think they missed that timing. I think they missed the moment where they had to pull on the ejection seat. I think they played themselves a little. But also, a team that pretty fresh with Mir now, Kicker not even being truly part of the squad, then maybe they may do it what they could. But yeah, they play themselves on.
Are you excited for the real lineup when they get the proper five in the server? Because to me, like, I always explain it like this. I don't enjoy the way Virtus Pro players, but here's what I do enjoy, Maniac. I enjoy what they do to these other top teams, though. Like, I actually love that if you're like a FaZe Clan and you fuck around any moment in this game, you're going to lose against Virtus Pro. They're going to make it like the dirtiest, ugliest win ever. But it's basically Virtus Pro, like we were talking about this topic earlier, they are the team that, like, this is the crucible. Where if you want to test like an ends, like can they come back from a bad game, or can like a player overcome a superstar by having back? This is the sort of team you want to put them against. This is like the final boss. They're not actually like the boss of the game. They're just they're the main henchman before you get to complete the game, as it were. You know, like to me, they're at their best when like the ultimate gatekeeper team. Because I look at this squad, mate. Not only is like always potential in that playing style, but people underestimate how good the players on this lineup are. Like, mate, this is a pretty deep lineup. I know it's not big names like Fame and Flip will never be at the level of Modesty. There's a superstardom that comes to that. But in terms of their game, these are really good players. Like, I want VP. It hasn't been the case this year. I want them somehow to be at every event. I know they're not in Blast, so it's going to be hard there. But every time you have a Cologne, I want them in the mix. I want them to be like that round of 6 team that you got to beat to show you're actually legit. Because they do bring something different to Counter-Strike.
Yeah, and they have players whose profile are really interesting to me. Like, I think Flit maybe has a little bit more reps under his belt than other Fame, for example. But we forget that these are also very young players in their career. Like, they're very young players. We know Flit was courted by Na'Vi for a while as a player, and they had interest in him as a rifle, and now he's in this roster as well. Fame came out of nowhere and in Rio was an absolute beast, a part of the 3 best players of the team by far. They had crazy stats. So these are players for whom I have great hope and expectations for the future. I also think that some of the issues that I have with VP, which again, being sometimes a little bit too cornered in one play style and too pigeonholed in one play style, which I think, even if it's great, has issues to it, is I feel like with Mir, you bring in a bit of aggression. yep. which is needed. You need to have someone. Sometimes we can say, fuck it, let's go. Like, you know, for the people who don't know, Mir comes from the Vega Squadron school of Counter-Strike, and that's as diametrically opposed to what VP is doing as you can possibly get on the spectrum.
The joke is, if VP, because obviously a gym, is like the plus back team, they were the plus press W team was Vega Squadron.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So I'm thinking, if you're clever on how you integrate him and how he wants to play the game, like, you can probably.
Yes.
I don't want them to change the whole idea. I think it's never a good plan to change the whole philosophy. But just here and there, just spice it up a little bit. I think Mir can bring that. He's also super skilled. Like, most people have forgotten him because he hasn't been active for, I think, at least 12 months. But he was always extremely sharp, as you like that term, as a player, super strong with the rifle. So when you have Fame, Flit, Mir, which for me is a trio that is super dangerous with the rifles, super, super sharp players. And then you have a little bit of experience coming with Mir, and you have the prospect of what Fame and Flit could become over the years. Then, yeah, I think this is a roster that's interesting to be in. And for as much as I don't necessarily enjoy watching it, you have to admit that Jame in itself, Jame is like enjoying Counter-Strike and utilizing Counter-Strike in a way that isn't exactly how you would first think about it, but you kind of have to respect it, even though you don't really like it. It's like, okay, that's fair. You know, I see what you're doing. You're forcing round 29, you're forcing round 30 with full guns. You're saving, you have these moments. Not, I don't think it's spectacular, but I respect that you go about and you don't exactly play by the normal rules and you just found a new way to kind of win the game on your own. That in itself, I think this is respect.
Put it this way, I'll give you the analogy, because as someone who's Swiss, you might be able to appreciate the tennis analogy. The problem with Jame is his style of play, and even his individual style of play, is like those players who are like the clay court grinder, where all they do is, they're not even trying to hit the winner, dude. They're just putting the ball back over the net. But because all they do is just run, it's just stamina. They just run, up and up and up. All they do is return. Tell you what, that is a really annoying style of play to play against. Like, it's a nightmare. But you have to respect people like that. When you play against them, you know that you earned your win when you beat them. You know, they're going to take you to the deep water. It's really going to be hard. Even though, as we say, those are probably the least enjoyed playing styles for fans ever. Like, they hate that style, obviously. But yeah, I get it. I get what you mean on the Mir angle, though, because to be fair, this is why, if you remember, I mean, it sounds like a million years ago, but remember early this year, there was that whole thing where they brought in the Chiron guy, and we thought it was going to be like that with him. What they're looking for, as far as I can tell, basically, like you say, is some like unbridled aggression, because that is what they lost when they lost Yekindar. The brilliant thing I thought, look, I actually think Yekindar himself, it got a bit too much to his head and he thought like he was the one doing everything. It was the contrast of Jame and Yekindar that I thought was genius in that team. It's that because they are polar opposite styles of player, if you can get them, if you can marry them together so they can like play those styles at the same time, it makes it even harder for the opponent. Because if all you have is that late round, late grind out style, like, that can still be beaten. Like, you can crack that open. If they have like a dynamic player like Yekindar, Amir, if they have the person who it's like the late rounds waiting to hold you as the insurance policy if the round gets to that point. But you have the guy where everyone remembers all Yekindar. It's like, he'll just run in and kill the two people. And now you're in a 5v3 on T side. Like, that changes the whole dynamic of the game. And I know, for example, on the old VP, they even used to sometimes play with that on CT sides. Like, they would actually, for real, on Inferno, swap Jame and Yekindar banana, because the logic went, if the last three rounds you attacked Jame and he had some bullshit off angle, well then you're gonna like super bomb rush him with a flash, but then suddenly that's when like Yekindar peaks as you flash and you've got that like moment where you're like holding the flash and he peaks out and then he just kills three in a row and you're like, fuck, well that's the nightmare. Imagine being the T-side caller trying to figure out which is it, like, am I gambling that it's Jame or is it Yekindar? Like, that dynamic, you can do a lot with that. And so to me, that's why, to me, there is a real potential to this squad.
They have to play off of it, because once again, people believe, and I believe, that VP is very predictable, but you can use that to your advantage. If they're so sure about what you're going to do, then here's right there for you. You have the trap all set. You can put Mir in terms of Jame in a couple of moments. I also think that whenever VP can stress you out a little bit in the early round, it makes their late round strong.
Yes.
And that's what they need. VP is a team sub 20 seconds. This is when they've all gone all of their success. So you cannot just sit back and wait and let your opponents execute on you with goddamn four Molotovs and three smokes and eight flashes at 20 seconds, because the teams nowadays in Counter-Strike have executes that are way too refined. But what if you had someone just being a little bit out there and forcing the trade and forcing pressure, forcing your opponents to use a little bit, maybe lose a member, lose a couple of flashes, have to extinguish a molly, whatever it is. You're weakening the end of the round. And this is where you strive, because if you're Jayme with an AWP, you want dry people to come at you. You want them to have a flash or two max, maybe a couple of smokes, that's it. This is where you have your impact. If you have just given them free access to all the real estate on the map, but they haven't had to use any of it, they're about to execute on you, you're done. That's it, you're not surviving that. Also, Jayme isn't necessarily a disruptive type of AWPer. He's more a punitive type of AWPer, where if there is a flash that's missing, if an angle that's not clear currently, boom, he's gonna get you, very safe, very stable. So the drier the team gets into the bomb site, the better it is for him. And for that to happen, you need someone who's ready to get stuck in a little bit early on and have these counter trades. And I think this is where Mir comes into play. And also people like Fleet, for example, who likes to get also stuck in and doesn't feel like multi-kill situations. So these, like you said, it's the marriage of flavor with them and Jayme. They need to do their part of the job so that Jayme can be put in these positions late round and close it Jayme style.
And by the way, if people look at Jayme as a player, right, I always say this, right? One of the things that is so crazy if you're a dominant AWPer is the reason why the gun itself in a way is OP. It's not, because here's the thing, if it was actually OP, you would use two of them more on sides and stuff like that. You know, it's not totally that it's OP. It's OP in certain regards. But one of the ways that it is OP compared to a rifle, and you can go look at the careers of the Nikos of the world and see this, is just imagine a standard duel between two players. If you have a rifle, odds are you're at least hitting a bullet on me, even if I kill you, so you're doing some damage. The problem with the AWP is, because I can just kill you and take no damage, the differential of what it can do to the game, sort of the plus minus effect, can be huge. And even though Jayme is misleading in the sense that he's not the guy getting the absurd amount of kills, guys, I guarantee, go look this up and you will be shocked. The amount of deaths per round that Jayme has is impossible. It is impossible. He will have tournaments, like this happened at this tournament now, at Gamers 8, he had 0.48 deaths per round, but he still had 0.77 kills per round. Like, that's almost impossible efficiency with an AWP. Like, if you do that, like, I might not like your style of play, but I've got to respect it, mate. You're making it work. Like, and here's the difference. When I blame Cadian for being the agile, like, oh, he's trying to be the hero or whatever, Jayme isn't. Like, he's not, we're not even putting him forwards as the star of the team, but the flaw of what he brings to the team, there's a reason why they're always in these games. Like, this isn't a guy ever throwing that AWP away. He's never put himself in a stupid scenario. I certainly don't think he could be, like, the star and do this. But now that he's got his other talents, he's got Flit, he's got Flame, he's maybe making... Suddenly, this works. This style can work. The only time I ever hated on Jayme was when it was a Vanguard and there was no Yikindar, and that was when they had Buster and Kicker and Sanji, like, and Adret. Mate, that was a whack liner. And that one, he needed to be Zewu to win those games. Now, he actually has the team where, like, the personnel can justify his style of play. And I'll tell you what, that style of play is a nightmare to play against. Like, here's another thing people don't think about. As the T-side caller, when you go against Virtus Pro, you're never going to face as many ops as this guy has, because he's never dying. And even when you do, they save the op. Like, people say, who are pros, who've talked to me about this, they say the worst thing about Jayme is they can even be on a save, but you know if they save the op, he's going to have the op in his spot. It's like he never doesn't have the op, you feel like. And that totally changes your headspace of how you think you can attack the spot. Like, again, like we were talking about with some of those other teams, sometimes when you're facing a Zewu, what you're waiting for is when you know, like, right, we got him, we killed him, he doesn't have the op for this round, so now this round becomes way easier for us to do an execute and a hit. You never get that vibe, Jayme. You can never tell if he's going to have the gun or not. I've even seen him for real just glass cannon it and, like, just say fuck it and just have it there. And tell you what, the amount of times on paper you go, this shouldn't work, if you're in the green room, it works. Again, it's like the simple thing I said earlier, I have to just give it up to Jayme. He knows something about his style of play that I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I do think sometimes this is the wrong decision, but he wins the round. So it's like, if you keep doing it consistently, mate, eventually I have to say it's me who doesn't know what I'm talking about. You win this one, Jayme. Again, much like in the game, begrudgingly, you win, Jayme. There you go. Not outright, but just begrudgingly at the end, you win. That's as is fitting. Entirely fitting. Oh, my God. Right, I think the one last team we talk about now is Heroic. Because I have to say, part of it is because, like I say, Ents sort of feels like Heroic a year ago with all the potential and the upside, and we're all loving it. And so in some ways, I am just being like, you know, friendship with Heroic ended. Now Ents is my new best friend. I am being like that in a way, but I don't want to be too dismissive. But mate, Someone pointed this out recently, and they're not wrong. I get it's because they'll have been number one seed in a lot of tournaments. Holy shit, does Hiroki get the easy paths in these tournaments, mate? Every group stage, they're playing like no one till like the, you know, if you're in the ESL format, they play like no one until they're in the match for like whether you go to semis or quarters. In this one, they had, especially because Gamer Legion won, they had one of the easiest marches to the semis you could ever see. But the problem is they're combining these easy runs with when they get there. Man, it's getting underwhelming now. Like, I don't mind you losing, but like this end swap, they're just getting dusted off, man. They're just getting beaten up and sent home, and it's looking so bad. Like, this is where I start to worry. Like, I don't think they're in any way going to be bad, but this is where, like I set up with the Ents question, I start to wonder, when I look at all these other squads that are strong now, like how, like the firepower of G2 and Vitality, and the fact that there's teams waiting in the wings, by the way, that might get it together, like maybe Cloud9 gets it together, maybe FaZe gets good again. I'm starting to feel like the Heroic window closed. It's bumming me out a bit, because I don't see where they're going to get anything extra. Like when is Staun going to give me that 10% extra? When am I going to get this, like, they're another team, by the way, that lose all those character-defining games. They just seem to always give them up.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's warranted now. I think the worry is warranted for Heroic. We've passed that point for two different reasons. One is they've started to have games where they just disappear. And the second map against Ents is a sad example, and that wasn't the case always with them. And also because the list of teams that now has eliminated them is become dangerously gigantic, right? It's not as we were be sitting here talking about how Heroic are struggling against the last two behemoths of the game.
Yes.
You know, it's G2 and Vitality, and they're just missing a little bit to beat them. No, we're talking about being eliminated from tournament now from Ents, Astralis, Mouse, Gamer Legion. These are the teams that have eliminated them for the last tournament. There's a long list, and they're never safe against anybody at that point in time. And that really worries me. And I'm even gonna double down. You know, the Washington victory that they get over Vitality, the whole spiel that they had around the whole event where they said themselves,
well, they were playing into the meme now about losing. Yeah, exactly. Right, I see what you mean.
We're gonna lose now. Yeah. That's it. It's playoff. It's time to lose. And then it seemed like it worked. And on short term, it's great. I feel like now it undermines my hope that I have in the future. Because if you really just memed your way to a W, you're not going to do that the whole time. It's not always going to happen. And now we're right back where we were before that Washington, which is it feels like they themselves are doubting the fact that they can do it. And I think it hurts even more once you go back to that state, right? If you think about the trajectory.
Oh, for sure.
Struggling, yes. And then epiphany or a hypothetical
breakthrough or whatever. Yeah, you're supposed to overcome exactly. It. Yeah.
Breakthrough, you have this huge grand final against Vitality, you make a fool out of Zai Wu in map 3, it's amazing, boom, yes. Everything's coming together, you're the best team in the world in the ranking, it's it. And then right back to where we started. Lost to whatever teams that you should never lose against, and it's obviously not in that category, but Mouse loss, Astralis loss as well,
that's the most
important tournament. That in itself is super hurtful mentally, super hurtful emotionally, because we know that sort of the psychological terrain that there is between Heroic and Astralis as well, that speaks volume to me. And now I'm wondering, what's the temperature check for them? Like, what's the temperature check between the team? How are they feeling about it? And for as much as I've always respected their team philosophy and how they do it the Heroic way, whether it works or not, and this is our way, this is our identity, I really think they're a great example to follow for that as a team. If people start to doubt what's happening, it's going to fall apart. It is going to fall apart really big. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a roster change soon from Heroic. I think if I were in their position, what would give me the hope that we're going to once again go back to winning finals? Why after being on the top and then losing it, why would we go back to there? And that, I think, is something that worries me a little bit. And, you know, I made a joke on the desk that, you know, like Dupree is probably waiting for a call right now. I think they might benefit from someone with a little bit more experience in there. Someone with a little bit more experience just to help them like handle these moments and have a little bit more calmness. I thought, you know, the greatest differential that I saw against Ents is how Ents were outmaneuvering them in tense scenario. Like how Ents were able to calm themselves and have the right call in a 3v3 and show down-to-earth reasoning and how to play the clutch, whereas Heroic were a little bit all over the place, and I thought they were more tense. They were more stressed, and they're supposed to have the experience of Ents. They've been there more than Ents. They've been at the top for a longer time now. They've been together for a longer time now. They are supposed to be the one handling these situations the better way, being more calm, being more lucid. And I didn't see that. And now I wonder, if it's not going to come from within, then do they need someone else to come in and maybe instill some of that calmness in these moments? Because the risk for Heroic and the play style that they have is the risk that when you play at that pace, you can lose yourself in scenarios, because you have so many chaotic moments where the calm is really high. It's very hard to maintain a level-headed decision-making, and they didn't. Like, they lose themselves against Ents.
That's actually a topic I want to pick up on, is it's not even just the way they're losing that disturbs me. It is that whole thing they did, that media offensive at the Blast event that they won, where it was sort of like, because here's the problem I always have when people banter, right? I'll give you a little secret as to how I do it. The reason why my banter, to me at least, always has like a basis to it, is I don't think of the joke first. The joke comes after the analysis. What happens is I'm thinking about the game anyway, and I'm seeing something happening, and then I think of something like I'll give you a random one, like Zimu choke in the big procedure, and then I think of a joke that would apply to that, and then I craft it, right? It isn't that I just bring it out whole cloth out of nowhere and it's like based on nothing. So to me, what I always ask when someone memes and banters is, like, if I boil this down like I'm a craftsman here, what is the punchline? What's the joke? And what's disturbing to me about that whole thing they did, where all of them except Cadian, including Zist, even their coach, memed this idea of like, lol, we'll probably just lose to anyone. Oh, we could lose anything in the quarters. We'll probably just, no way we're going to win this game, guys. Like, isn't the punchline that you're making that we're wrong and that you don't choke in those scenarios, and so you're like making fun of the fact that we're pointing it out, right? But what I don't get about that is you're just in denial then, mate. Like, the saddest thing is, I tried to make this point on some shows. You know, most of the people making that point that you're choking and underwhelming and not winning the tournaments you should win, we're fans of yours. We're not the haters. We're actually, like I said, like the reasonable Zero stand who wants to see him get to the fifth gear and become the best player ever. Like, we actually, we're bummed out that you're not winning these tournaments. Because the worst thing is, the reason we say it, even when we say it's choking, it's a compliment. And here's why. Because like I said, if you really were the underdog in all of your finals, then on paper, you maybe should lose all of them. You weren't the underdog. Even better, you've beaten all those teams if it's a different match. Same as Ents does now. If you'd played that same Vitality squad and it was a semi of a different tournament, you've beaten them. You've done it. You've shown me you can beat them. So when you can't win in the final, it has to be you. You're the only defining quality left. And the reason why that actually disturbs me is because the number one thing that will kill you when you have a problem in this game, Maniac, is when you're in denial of it. Because the longer you're in denial, the less time until you accept it, and then you can actually start to address it and fix whatever the issue is. And I've seen this in a million angles. I've told this story in the past. One of the reasons Device took so many years, I was there. I was a mate of his. I used to talk to him after the events and do like the little breakdown in the, you know, like the cab to the airport, or whatever. He would always fall back to this thing of sort of like, you're putting so much pressure on me. I'm not supposed to be like the carry. Like, I'm just one of a number of players. Like, I've got like Cage and B and Dupree. Like, you know, it's collectively we're supposed to win. And it's like, I know what you mean, but you clearly go missing in some of these matches. Like, when they deny that, all you do is you're gonna have to face the problem eventually. You just keep putting it off in the distance. And the classic one, if you're a choker, is you go, it was just a bad game, or they just played well. It's like, mate, it's always a bad game for you though. It's always someone else playing better and you're congratulating them. So the thing I'm concerned about is, I think in history of some of the other examples, like a classic one for me was when they first made that Vitality squad with Ziwu, when they kicked out Happy and got Alex in. If people remember, it was actually a solid like 3 or 4 months before Alex took over as the IGL. It used to be NBK was the IGL at the beginning, if people remember. That was actually part of why they did that project. Well, when I would always tell them, even privately, like, look, I just don't think this works, mate. I don't think NBK IGL works. They wouldn't say, like, I just disagree. They were just in denial. They were like, it does, or it will, or, you know, you just don't see what we see in scrims. And so as a result, that instead of just immediately figuring out, this doesn't work, actually, Alex, you take over, they just delayed that by, what, 4 or 5 months or something. And then, by the way, spoiler, I don't even need to tell you the tournament. If you just go and look on Liquipedia when they suddenly made all the finals. That was when Alex took over as the IGL. Like, it's one of those ones that in hindsight looks so obvious now. And the real concern I have for Heroic is, like we're talking about, it kind of feels like their window's gone. So I need them to today figure out what is going on. Like we're saying, if it turns out it's a player, if there really is one, and it's going to be brutal for their team, by the way, because they've also really ridden that like power of friendship type narrative of like, we did it all. They're not doing it like Vitality, where they can ruthlessly say, look, even though we just won the Blast thing and the others, sorry, Tess, I'm picking a random player, or Shush or someone. Listen, you were a really good player. We loved having you here, but we're going to replace you tomorrow. And we're going to do this like gamble that we're going to get to the top again. They also don't seem like attitude-wise otherwise, that's like something they're really willing to consider. And my concern is that this is eventually going to be a bell curve. You had the rise, you had the nice middle period, and it's just tipped. And unfortunately, we're on sort of the downslope. And that's going to be so tragic, because when I look at the current landscape, just like Ents, I want a Heroic in here. This is another team that makes the G2s of the world earn that win and actually have to show me they're good. It's not like when they play some of the other random squad. Like, if G2 plays the current Na'Vi squad now, G2 should win all day long. There's no reason they shouldn't. Like, that's not a great scalp to have. Heroic still means something to beat them. So I just really hope, whoever it is, I don't know if it's Cadian, I don't know if it's Exist, I don't know if it's the Org, whatever it is, it's not, look, I'll never make it as reductive as just get a sports psychologist. I'm sure they have one already. I'm sure they're working with already. But whatever this issue is, you have to be cognizant there is something holding you back, because this team is almost too good. Like, it will be a tragedy, Maniac, if they, if their careers end and they didn't get more real, if they don't get a Cologne, a Katowice, that'll be a travesty, because this team was more than good enough. They gave themselves a lot of chances to win.
I agree.
And I'm a fan. I love watching them play.
I mean, they, after all, they've, in a game where there are so many matches and so many teams and so many events, they were able to create their way of playing Counter-Strike.
Yes.
And every time there's a team that accomplishes it, I think in itself, they've earned themselves a position in the history and the legends of the game, because they were able to do it their own way. I just wanted to quickly bounce back on that whole debate about, you know, the memes and what it means. I also think psychologically, there's a concept that's really important. It's called locus of control, which is basically, if you're saying, I've lost because I was unlucky or my opponents were so good, it's not my fault. The perverse downside of it is that whenever you win, it's not your fault either.
Oh, right.
So you cannot... That's the problem. And sometimes people miss that part, right? Because if you are at interviews talking about how, you know, we're memeing, we're having a good time, we're never going to win this, and then you win, how can you truly reap the fruits of what you've accomplished? Because you've kind of, you've made it so that you never really had to face that pressure. You never had to deal with these choking moments that we're talking about. So per se, you haven't really defeated it. You just put it aside. And so you cannot claim any of that. And I think that that's a problem. I would rather just face it straight on and take the negative, but then you can also own up the positive. You can be in control of what is happening to you for the good and the bad. And sure, yes, you can address some of the limitations that you have. And for us, the Heroic conversation sometimes from the outside is complicated, because all we see is obviously an external perspective of players being on the server, and then we make assumptions of, oh, this guy has pressure, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. We are not the players. They themselves would be better positioned to talk about it. But the only way to improve is to start by accepting that there is something that is not going right. Because then, if you refuse responsibility in what is happening to you in the negative scenario, you take away your right to claim responsibility in what's happening in the good scenario. You take away the power. It's like saying to someone, oh, it's not your fault. You're in a bad position, but it's going to be all right. You haven't done anything. The world is against you. If you say that to someone, you're robbing them from the power to change their own situation. Because if it's not their fault that things are not going well, but it's not going to be their fault when things are going good. And that, I think, would... I mean, obviously, they probably have people helping them. I'm probably going through open doors already. But this is something that they really have to put on the table, right? Just address the situation. Don't meme. It's not going anywhere. That thing is not going away. And we know you have the Counter-Strike for it. You've proven that you have the Counter-Strike for it. It's not a problem of quality of game. No one is discussing the quality. It's there. So yeah, address it. Address it immediately. Like, we can meme one event, but I'm with you. I would like Heroic to be a team that goes into a semifinal or a grand final, and I know they're going to deliver, because then, whoa, the spectacle that they put together. That's like the high octane Counter-Strike that we like to see.
Also, by the way, I will just say, to tag onto that last thing, and maybe we'll wrap there, is this is actually something, if people are younger players out there listening, this is one of the things I actually thought was the most admirable about Simple during his journey to become the GOAT, is even in that GOAT year where he always would lose to Astralis and his team was like the third or fourth best, and even though he was putting up crazy numbers, right? People might think that I wouldn't fuck with this, because on one level, I do think it was slightly disingenuous. You know, he would always do these interviews where even though he was playing like an unparalleled level of Counter-Strike, he would always totally take the win solely on his personal shoulders, the loss rather. Like, if he lost the game, he would be like, well, you know, like because everyone else wanted him to go either it's Astralis, so, you know, not your fault, they're the best team ever, or they wanted him to sort of at least hint at, like he does now, and sort of a bit flame teammates and be like, well, fucking, you know, Edward or Zeus or something. He never ever did that. What he used to do was take it solely on his shoulders and be like, I'm sure there were things in the game I could have done differently, or moments when I could have gotten an extra kill or gotten a kill. Now, even though And on one level, I don't like that because it's like, I know what you mean, but like some of those were the bigger factor why you didn't win. But what you're talking about, as a way to psychologically retain control of the situation, it's perfect. Because what Simple did in that scenario was realize, rather than waste all this energy now, essentially bitching out Edward because he had a bad game, or just going, why God, why did I exist when Astralis did? Instead of doing that, which makes you actually a powerless victim, he actually was sort of saying, is there anything more I could do? Like, is there even like a 0.1% I could grind out of my game more that would let me win next time? And not only one, does that actually always make you feel like you've got something you can do in the match, which is an empowering feeling. But also, quite frankly, I even argue personally, I think the same thing in my opinion with Carrigan as an IGL and Simple as a player. I actually think we should be grateful it took them so many years to win the biggest accolades. Because if they'd have won in year one, do they ever get to this level? Do they keep I don't know if they do. In some ways, even though it was torturous for them, it's actually more beautiful that they had to go through so many crazy jumping through hoops and leveling up, that by the time they got there, the finished product was unbelievable as a result. Because these guys really did go back and act like a 9 out of 10 performance wasn't good enough, and they had to be a 10 out of 10. But you see what the end result can be, though. Like, that's actually a very sort of shrewd psychological phenomenon I think you bring up there as a lens.
No, definitely. And honestly, like, for people watching the podcast, you guys have to realize this is not just for Counter-Strike. Like, it's a life hack.
Yes,
like it is a life hack to being able to consider you as the main actor and sole responsible person for what is happening to you in your life, for the good and the bad. And I think we all, and I speak from experience as well, we all like to sometimes look for external reasons why failure is upon us, and you know how unlucky we were and the circumstances around us, and whatever. What we are effectively doing is robbing us from the chance to change it. So even though it can hurt at times, taking ownership of whatever is happening to you also means retaining power and control over whatever your life is. And that in itself is invaluable.